Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here. That's me. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we're here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. It's also Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. You can get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. Play them later. 312-981-7200. Coming up this morning on the show, in just a few minutes, Chris Anderson and Charlie Short are going to be here. They're in Androgynous Mustache, and they're going to be performing at the 9th annual Warren Zevon Birthday Bash, which is Thursday, January 23rd, week from tonight, at Space in Evanston. We have these guys on every year to talk about the Warren Zevon Birthday Bash, and this is the 9th annual one that they're doing. And we're also just going to talk in music in general. Chris and Charlie, really cool guys, and play a lot around town. And so we're going to talk music and Warren Zevon coming up in just a few minutes when Chris and Charlie join me. And they are right now, they're in the PPG Paints green room. So we will get them from the PPG Paints green room and talk live with those guys. And then after 2 o'clock, it's our biweekly visit with Dan Feinberg. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Lots of TV to talk about with Dan, and we love to talk with Dan about TV, and that'll be coming up after 2 o'clock. Also, we're going to get hit with a pretty good winter storm this weekend. We're supposed to get a good amount of snow, and then we're going to get a real cold snap. So winter's really going to kick into high gear over the weekend. So I thought maybe we could think about summer. Summer songs that were really, really hot in summer's past. So we'll tell you about those and maybe play a little bit of them and reminisce about songs that define summer and songs that were big during certain years during the summer. So that's coming up. And also, we've been celebrating National Pizza Week because, you know, you can't just have a pizza day. It's pizza. It deserves an entire week. So we got a little more pizza talk to do, and we will do that later on as well. Again, 312-981-7200 is our phone number. That's talk, text, and Triple Play Thursday requests, 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. And stay connected with us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. And you know what? Get our podcast. Subscribe to our podcast. Tons of people do, and we really appreciate that. If you can't listen on the overnights because you're asleep, you can listen at your leisure, bro, by just subscribing to the podcast. And you can go to iTunes or any place where you get those podcasts. Subscribe. It's free, and they will automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro, and check out all our podcasts at WGNradio.com. All right. Let's say hello to my great producer, Dan Shagru. Hi, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you, buddy?
Good, man. How about yourself?
I'm all right. Triple Play Thursday. And, we're going to start a little bit later because we're talking with Dan Feinberg
right
after 2 o'clock, and we've got Chris and Charlie coming in to talk a little Warren Zevon. And we always, every time we talk about Warren Zevon, Dan, we lament the fact that he's never even been nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right.
Which is a damn shame.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, we'll talk a little bit about that. In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Morning, sir.
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing okay.
All
doing
right.
Very good. Thursday,
yeah.
Ready to go.
It's Thursday. We're ready to go. You know, I'll tell you what. You know, I'm sure that people are not thrilled that we're getting a winter storm. We're supposed to, in the city, I think we're supposed to get about 4 inches. They said like 4 to 6 inches. But then the winds are going to pick up on Saturday, and then the temperatures drop big time for the next couple of days. So we're going to have some winter. It's going to feel like winter. But I will say this, as far as like our commute goes, Dan, it couldn't happen at a better time. I think my parents and I are going to have to cancel going to the movie this weekend, and I think I'm going to have to go see the M. Night Shyamalan movie like Friday afternoon before the storm comes in. But we were going to go see it on Saturday, but I don't want to be out in that, and I don't want my parents out in the winter storm. But you know, they say that the snow is going to start right around rush hour on Friday evening,
right?
And then it's supposed to end on Sunday. You know, as far as like impact on our commute,
thankfully,
the people that, the people that work at, you know, these hours, again, sometimes it works out great.
Sure.
You know, I feel bad for the people who are going to be stuck on, you know,
right,
outside
right.
And a lot of the people who have to work on Saturday are people who have to work outdoors.
Right.
So, but again, it could be worse. I mean, you know, 4 inches isn't that bad. We've had much worse in the past. So, but again, it's January in Chicago, so we have to expect this kind of thing. But everybody stay warm over the weekend, and so, but I guess we're getting their first really cold temperatures like Sunday night, and then I think that goes all the way to Tuesday, the really cold stuff. And then I was looking at the forecast, it warms up a little bit following that. So it's just going to be a few days of some snow and some winter. There you go. All right. So Dan, you know what I'm doing immediately when I get home in the morning.
I have a feeling I know. Yes.
I will be watching The Masked Singer.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to mention that to Dan. I don't know how he's going to react to the fact that I'm obsessed with this show, which is one of the stupidest shows I've ever seen in my life, one of the most ridiculous things that's ever been on television, and yet I love it. I don't know how Dan's going to respond to that. I'm kind of curious.
I got a good feeling. Dan usually goes for the cultural pop phenomenon that, you know, yeah. He's an esteemed critic, but he's a man of the people still.
Mm-hmm. And the people love the show, man.
Yes, I
guess it's amazing to me because, you know, when it premiered 3 weeks ago, I was like, all right, I'll watch this stupid thing. And it's stupid. There's no question about it. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. But I can't stop watching it. It's shocking to me how many people feel the same way that I do about it. Like, we're watching it. And we know it's nonsense. We know it's absolutely stupid, ridiculous nonsense. And yet, I can't turn it off. I can't, and I laugh, and I have a great time watching it. And so, anyway, that's my Thursday. My Thursday morning now habit is to get home and watch The Masked Singer, and then my Friday morning, of course, is Top Chef. So, when we can talk about Top Chef with Dan as well. So, Vic, you haven't seen The Masked Singer yet, have you?
I still haven't.
No.
I really want to. I just haven't done it yet.
It's really the stupidest thing ever.
It looks amazing.
Oh, my God. I love it. I love it. So, all right. Well, anyway, and by the way, no spoilers, because if you watched it last night, I don't want to know what's going on.
I would never do that.
I know. No, you would never do that. No. No, Vic would never do that. Ruined the finale of Top Chef.
Never purposely do that.
Top Chef ruined Top Chef last week or last year, last season for me. But
it was
last season. But I will say this. Obviously, you know, it was a good story to have in your news report, because the dude who won last year was from Chicago. So the angle, the reason why you reported on it,
right,
makes total sense, because the chef who won, unfortunately, I had not watched it yet. And I remember sitting in the studio and you said, oh, the winner of Top Chef is Joe. And I was like, no, because I was going to go home and watch the big finale.
I laugh now, but I felt horrible when I did it.
Well, anyway.
How many contestants are on, you know, roughly on The Masked Singer? I mean, how many?
There are.
Will it carry you through sweeps into May, or is it going to?
No, no, it's not going to go that far. I think there were. Oh God, how many were there to start? 10, I think.
10 sounds like a good number.
Or it could be 8, because they had. No, it was two. No, you know what? Because they did three songs each week with the contestants. It's 12. So it's 12, because they did, like, the first week they did 6. They had 6 perform. And then last week they had the other 6 perform. And now this will be the first time after that all 12 have performed, and now we'll get to see them perform a second time. That started last night. So it was originally, 12. And 12 of the craziest costumes and masks. I don't even. It's just so ridiculous, Dan. I'm telling you, it is unbelievably ridiculous. So, and I can't wait to watch it in the morning. So, anyway. All right. That's The Masked Singer, everybody. I highly recommend it. And if you hate it, I totally understand. And if you think I'm a moron, you're right. So, all right. Let's take a break. We come back, and we're going to talk with Chris Anderson and Charlie Short of Androgynous Mustache all about the Warren Zevon birthday bash, which takes place a week from tonight at Space in Evanston. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And we're here till 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text your Triple Play Thursday request. That, of course, was the great Warren Zevon, one of the greatest singer-songwriters ever. And There's every year there is a Warren Zevon birthday bash, and it's performed by the band Androgynous Mustache. This year it's a week from tonight at Space in Evanston, and Chris Anderson and Charlie Short of Androgynous Mustache join me live in studio to talk all things Warren Zevon. Guys, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, how you guys been? Been a while since I talked to you.
Yeah, it's been since
October.
Halloween.
Yeah, you guys were here for. Oh, okay. So the last time you guys were here, you do the Halloween bash where bands play different
perform as other bands.
Yeah. Yeah, and you guys did Kenny Loggins.
Yes.
Yes.
How'd that go?
It was great.
Yeah.
Every time we do this, I mean, sometimes it'll be like, collectively we'll decide what we're going to do. And this was one of the years like, I don't want to do this, man. And then it came up to really showtime, and we performed like, I'm having a blast.
Yeah.
And it's really, you just got to, it's like acting, and you just got to, it is acting. I mean, you are not just performing the songs, you're performing as that band.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a blast. It was a ton of fun.
What was the what was your set list like? What else did you, did you play any of the like duets that he did?
We did
I Call You Friend, and
well, we did Footloose. I mean, we did the hits.
Yeah.
Top Gun stuff, Danger Zone,
Caddyshack.
Caddyshack. Yeah. And then there was,
we did This Is It.
Yeah. Oh, This Is It. Yeah, yeah, that's a jam. Yeah.
It is a jam.
Yeah. What were some of the other bands that you've done in the past? And
That we've done in the past.
Yeah.
Well, the next night I did Boston.
Right.
Oh, how'd that go?
It was
phenomenal.
Apparently great. We won.
Yeah.
We won Halloween as Chris.
Oh, you
got.
Oh, you did. You won. You did.
Yeah.
It was like, I mean, this is Charlie's own crew, and that is a major undertaking.
Oh yeah.
You don't do that as a five piece, man.
No.
That was heavy, and they killed it.
Did you guys get the guitar sound? Did you get the?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the most important thing with Boston. You got to get that Scholes guitar sound.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have some good. We had some good players, and
the vocals are tough too on that. What did you guys play? I mean, because you could just play the entire first album.
Well, yeah, we're doing that again, like in a couple of weeks. But yeah, we did a couple, two or three from the first record, and then we did Amanda and Don't Look Back, and we did More Than a Feeling, Rock and Roll Band, Foreplay, Long Time, of course.
Of course, yeah. You have to play.
We
that.
We opened with Foreplay, Long Time,
of course.
And I have a couple of folks in my band who are rock school teachers. And so they had everything just perfect.
That's awesome.
So there's a video online, and you can see it.
Oh, is that right?
And Kelly, who's our keyboard player, she has had a couple of like back surgeries and hip surgeries. She had like a car accident. And so all she's been doing is like getting Boston perfect. So in a couple of weeks, she's like, oh, I've got the smoking solo all note for
note. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So.
What were some of the other bands again that on Halloween? What were some of the other guys?
I teamed up with Phil and Gotti, and we did Chris Isaak, which was great.
Oh,
it was really good.
Yeah.
Rachel Drew did Blondie.
Mm-hmm.
What else did we have? We had the Mammals did Bloody Holly.
Did
a zombie Buddy Holly. And they cranked.
Yeah, they were great.
I think it's really a tribute to those nights, and it was our 15th year doing it.
Wow.
And how much effort and how serious the bands take it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, you're not just playing the tunes, man. You are the band.
Yeah.
You are costume and all.
Yeah.
It is it's an acting performance.
Now, so did, for the Kenny Loggins, did you guys have beards?
I had a long, Peter Andriotis was Kenny Loggins.
Yeah.
And he had a beard.
Okay.
And he had the sunglasses. He played acoustic guitar. And that's the thing, you look the part. And he looks the part just being himself.
Right.
He really cranked it up a notch.
Right.
And those are tough notes to hit. And he, put in the work, and it was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like fun. Now, where are you doing you're doing the whole first Boston album?
Yeah, we're doing that at Reggie's on the 31st for Classic Album Night.
Is anybody else doing something?
Phil Ungotti, of course.
Yes.
Because, no music thing happens in Chicago without mentioning Phil and Gotti. Hi, Phil.
And he's been in here 900 times, yeah, Phil. And I've known him for like 30 years.
Yeah.
We go back to the 80s Beetlefest.
Right.
We used to go to Beetlefest every year and stay at the hotel, and Phil was always there and hanging out.
And he's doing Cheap Trick's second record, I think.
In color?
Black he's doing it in color.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Yeah.
That album rules.
Yeah, because they always like try to do like a theme, whether it's like the year or sort of the era. And so In Color's 75 and then Boston 76.
Yeah.
And Phil saw me do it. He's like, you got it. You have to come out. So
that's all. And that's at Reggie's.
That's at Reggie's. Yeah.
For, yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be, that should be, it's going to be a busy week, busy couple of weeks for me.
Yeah. Clearly.
Yeah.
Well, let's, first of all, by way of introduction for people who might not know who you guys are. I mean, I've known you guys for a very long time. But Chris, tell everybody you're a musician. You play drums. You've been in 900 bands.
900, exactly.
Yeah. And you're originally from?
I grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Moved mm-hmm. here right after college in 2000. Right. Jeez. I wish it was 2000. 1994.
Man, you could I was going to say, you graduated there. College in 2000?
I graduated in 2015. I'm 22.
And you've been here since 1994?
Yes.
And did you play music when you were in New Mexico?
I did. I mean, that was a thing. It was kind of like a sports or music type of thing growing up as a kid. And I remember the first band that I was in, I was actually the lead singer.
Wow.
And we did like Clash and Ramones and Replacements and...
Did you play drums at the same time?
Nope.
You were just a front man.
Well, I was just dumb enough to do it. Well, I didn't have any skill. Like, just put that guy in there. Just yell at somebody. And that's really what it was. And I remember the name of our band, we changed it like 15 times, but the first name was the Bronx Cheer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, why?
I didn't even know what it was until...
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Sounds good to me. What's the Bronx?
That's great. And then you came here. What brought you here?
My brother's then girlfriend, now wife, was going to school at Loyola, and I was in Ithaca at college. And this was kind of like an 11-hour drive, as opposed to driving all the way to Albuquerque, New Mexico. And
you would come to Chicago.
I would come to Chicago, yeah. And that was kind of, I just, as soon as I got here, I was like, man, this city's amazing.
Yeah. And how long had Scott lived? You're talking about Scott, your brother.
Correct.
Yeah. How long is Scott, by the way, terrific actor.
Yes.
And I've had him on the show a couple mm-hmm. of times, too. But how long has he been here?
On and off since 1992.
Oh, okay. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And it's he's still here, right, in town?
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Now, Charlie, tell everybody about yourself.
Sure. I grew up in Evanston and live there now again and, you know, 40 years. And, yeah, I played some kind of instrument for most of that time. Not always well. Mm-hmm. I actually, just the other day, we moved a friend of mine's parents out of their house where I had my first band.
So, come on, really?
Yeah, like, just like 3 days ago. So we.
How was that? Was that weird?
It was very weird because his parents still live here and like, it's, you know, we see them quite a bit. And he lives out in Philadelphia and said, I'm going to be in town for like 4 hours. Can you meet me? And we'll move all this stuff out. And we're like in his old bedroom. And
oh, that must have been crazy.
It is pretty crazy. It feels like it's always, when we go there, it's always quite a flashback. He had this dog that would attack everybody. And they had these like, we would rehearse, you know, we'd rehearse the three songs that we knew. we had more names than we had songs or shows. And then we'd go into the house, and then you went down these like the spiral staircase that the dog couldn't go down. So the trick was to try to get down it. And I still, it's been 25 years since that dog attacked me, and I still was like, the dog's been dead for 10 years.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I gotta get down the stairs.
I gotta get down the stairs as quickly as possible so I don't get, what was the dog's name?
Augie.
Augie.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a big, like 180-pound Labrador.
Wow.
He's huge.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's all, you know, very friendly. Once he got older, he was super friendly because he's a lab.
Yeah.
But when we were 15 and really.
And he wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't like the noise coming from,
no,
from
he did
the
not.
Basement. Augie. Whenever I hear the name Augie, I think of that the diner in Andersonville.
Yeah.
I used to go there every morning, sure, yeah. Man. I was there all the time. After a night of drinking at Simon's, I would end up the next day at Augie's.
Right next to Callow, right?
Yeah.
Or Kalo, whatever.
It was a great diner, mm-hmm. man. And Augie was the man. He was mm-hmm. the king. He was the best. So that was a lot of fun. That brings back a lot of memories. I lived in Andersonville for a long time.
Me too.
And I spent a good portion of time at Augie's. Great. Dan, have you ever been to Augie? Have you ever been to Augie's? It's closed now, but it was a landmark Andersonville place. I mean, you
had like the best sign in the world.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, absolutely. Old school, total old school, man. And that was in those were in the days when I would go with Jim Lagelli a lot, and we would meet up.
Wow.
Yeah, Jim.
The BC Tap. Yeah. Right? Balmoral and Clark.
No. He worked at.
That was right next to BC Tap.
Yeah. Yeah,
I remember the T-shirts and the sign, save the BC Tap.
Yeah, save the BC Tap. That's right. Yeah,
why do you want to save this place?
That was the only bar that the BC Tap was the only bar that I'd been to where they had carpet on the floor.
I was just going to say that.
How the hell do you have a bar with carpet on the floor? And how many cigarette butts were put out? Because this was back in the day when you could smoke in the bar.
Yeah.
And there's crushed cigarette butts all over the carpet. Totally. That was a weird bar, man.
Very different time in Andersonville.
It certainly was, man. It certainly was. All right, guys, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Chris Anderson and Charlie Short here from Androgynous Mustache. They will be performing at the Warren Zevon Birthday Bash next Thursday, the 23rd, at Space in Evanston. We got information on our Facebook page. We're going to talk more about that and Warren Zevon right after we take a break for the news, which is next. Warren Zevon. He was the best. Yeah, that's Warren Zevon, and Chris Anderson and Charlie Short of Androgynous Mustache are part of the band that's going to be performing at the 9th annual Warren Zevon Birthday Bash Thursday, January 23rd at Space in Evanston. We have a link for more information on our Facebook page. And Chris and Charlie, welcome back, guys.
Good to be here.
That is a great song, obviously. One of many, many great songs that Warren Zevon wrote. And we always talk about this every time you guys come down, the fact that he's never been nominated to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The fact that he's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a massive misjustice.
Totally. And the fact that hasn't even been nominated.
Ugh.
I mean, the guy's influenced just about everybody.
Yeah.
And we were talking about on a drive over here, like, there's a reason he hung out with Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You got a rock musician that hangs out with Hunter S. Thompson. It's probably pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I just want to remind everybody: Bon Jovi's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Warren Zevon's never been nominated. Def Leppard is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Warren Zevon has never been nominated. how old would Warren Zevon have been?
68, I think.
Yeah,
68.
Yeah,
yeah. He died in 2003.
I think it was September of 2000.
It was 2003 because I remember he was diagnosed and he lived longer than they said he was going to.
After his diagnosis, I think he lived a little over a year or about a year.
Yeah, and when he got diagnosed with cancer, he said, "Look, all I want to do is make it to the new Bond movie," because he was a huge Bond fan. The World Is Not Enough was the Bond movie, and they ended up screening it for him. You know,
it would have been Die Another Day.
The
World Is Not Enough is 99.
Oh, okay. Well, wow.
Yeah.
You James Bond fan?
Maybe.
Okay. So Die Another Day
is the one with Halle Berry.
With Halle Berry. And did Madonna do the song on that one? Okay. Yeah. That's the one.
Yeah.
I get my Pierce Brosnan movies all mixed up.
Well, because Pierce Brosnan is in a different movie. He's great.
Yeah.
And those movies are terrible.
Yeah.
Like, he's in a great James Bond movie. I don't know. I'd love to see those.
Mm-hmm. You didn't like GoldenEye?
GoldenEye's pretty good. Tomorrow Never Dies pretty good.
Yeah.
Michelle Yeoh's great.
Well, yeah.
And the World Is Not Enough has got some great stuff in it, but it's super... Because it was directed by the guy who did the 7-Up movies. And then the action sequences are directed by somebody else.
Yeah.
And so it's this great, like, emotional thing, and then these, like, super crazy...
So Michael Apted directed that?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't even remember. I really don't even remember.
Yeah, it's got Sophie Marceau and Robert Carlyle is the bad guy.
Carlyle's the bad guy?
Yeah.
Which one is the one where Jonathan Pryce is the bad guy?
That's Tomorrow Never Dies.
That's Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where he's starting a war to get the cable rights to China for 100 years.
Good reason.
Wait
to
a minute.
Start
wait.
A war.
I don't even remember. See, I'm not the biggest Bond guy in the world. You know, I thought the Casino Royale was phenomenal.
It was excellent.
It was great. And I wasn't crazy. I know everybody loved Skyfall.
Yeah.
Everybody loved that one that didn't do anything. I liked Albert Finney's in that one, right? Running around with a gun. Is that Skyfall or is that?
Because all of the action sequences in the Craig movies are great.
Yeah,
and actually, Quantum of Solace, if you sort of watch it as like a bunch of extra scenes from Casino Royale, it's awesome.
Yeah,
but it's not really a good standalone movie. Like, there's a great car that opens with a great car sequence. Mm-hmm. Anyways, it's I'm a huge Bond.
Clearly, yeah. This is something I did not know about you.
Yeah,
I didn't. Do you have a favorite Bond movie?
Probably. I'm supposed to say Under Majesty's Secret Service, but I'm gonna, which is a great.
Under Majesty's Secret Service is a great movie.
Great film.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's the first one I saw in the theater.
It's just everything that's right about Bond. Connery is just funny enough.
Yeah.
He's angry. He's old. He's 5 years younger than, I think 4 or 5 years younger than Roger Moore was at the time. Mm-hmm. And looks like he's like 20 years
older.
Yeah,
that's true.
I mean, it's just great. It's just all the way through.
It's funny because, the Bond that I, during my formative years, was Roger Moore.
Yeah.
That was the Bond I grew up on. I mean, the first Bond movie I ever saw in the theater was Diamonds Are Forever. That was his last, Connery, his last Bond movie until he did Never Say Never Again, which wasn't official.
Right.
But I remember seeing it in the movie theater, and I was really young when that movie came out. I was probably 5 or 6 when it came out. But Roger Moore was like my teenage, years, and it was Roger Moore. And in retrospect, Roger Moore is not very good in the Bond movies. And
I think there's some good, again, because all of those things kind of mash together, and he made a lot of movies really quick.
Yeah.
So, looking back on it, I enjoy Roger Moore now more, and I like a lot of those sequences.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the stuff from Roger Moore is from the book. So the plots aren't the same, but all the action sequences are pulled directly.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you look at, I don't know, I forget which one it is, but there's a whole movie where like everything is directly from the books, and they were doing that a lot in those Moore years. So all those action sequences are really well composed. And, but he's
And faithful.
Very faithful.
Yeah. Well, he was the saint. That's why he got the gig.
Right.
So anyway, I did not know you were an expert on the James Bond movies.
Yeah.
Wow.
Neither did I.
Why? You didn't know that until just now?
We'll bring it up next Wednesday. Screw this Zevon stuff. Let's talk about 007.
Yeah. So here's the deal. So he wanted to, and so they screened it for him.
Yeah.
And he was disappointed.
Yes.
In it. So another aspect of Warren Zevon that we have to talk about is how much David Letterman loved him and the relationship that he had with David Letterman.
Yeah.
And that last appearance that that Zevon made on Letterman before he passed away is just fantastic.
It's very touching.
Yeah. And he Paul Schaefer would, anytime Paul Schaefer was away, which wasn't very often,
Zevon would fill in. He always said, and said to Letterman on his last appearance, said, you're the best friend my music ever had.
Mm.
And I mean, I think that Letterman's done that with certain musicians, definitely with Zevon, and even to a certain extent, Tom Waits.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are guys that, like, certain other talk show hosts or networks wouldn't want to touch.
Yeah.
And Letterman was like, that's the guy.
Yeah.
I want him on my show.
It was great because I was a Zevon fan for years. And I love the fact that Letterman embraced Warren Zevon because you didn't see Warren Zevon anywhere.
Right.
Really, he didn't have a lot of exposure on television at all.
Agreed.
Didn't get a lot of, he didn't have a ton of radio play either, And I think people might know some of the songs that he's written that other people have recorded.
Sure.
Like Poor, Poor, Pitiful Me. That's a Linda Ronstadt hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he
was. Hasten Down the Wind.
Hasten Down the Wind, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, it's interesting that people might have known some of his songs, had no idea who he was or what, because he was always kind of on the fringe.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about this every year when you guys come in. What was your first exposure to Warren Zevon for you, Chris?
It was seeing my oldest brother's record collection and seeing the record of Excitable Boy, and I'm like, who is this weird looking dude?
Mm-hmm.
This is a weird looking
and
dude.
Why is there a gun on a plate on the back of the record?
And then I listened to it. I was 10 years old or something like that. I'm like, this is kind of scary, but kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
what about you?
Probably hearing like Werewolves on the Radio.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to play a game where I would try to guess when I was a kid and I didn't have access to all the records, listen to classic rock radio and guess who was a singer if it was a song I didn't know.
Did you guess was the singer of Werewolves?
Was Warren Zevon.
Oh.
And that, I mean, because he's so distinctive.
Yeah.
So I remember hearing Lawyers, Guns, and Money the first time. I'm like, oh, that's the Werewolves of London.
That's the, yeah, very distinctive vocal style. No question about it. No question about it. Yeah, and as we always, mention, incredible songwriter and with a wicked sense of humor. Like,
extremely.
His songs are, there are some really funny stuff in his, like, Incitable Boy is a hilarious song.
Yeah.
Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner, the payoff at the end, like the final line, the final line is so hilarious. I heard Werewolves of London, and I thought it was great and got Excitable Boy and then became obsessed, with him and went back and got the first record and then stayed, you know, obsessed with Warren Zevon all the way up until his death. I just think, one of the best songwriters of all time.
Yeah.
And
the way he mixes music with lyric is just, it's really pretty impressive. I mean, like I said, he's up there with Bob Dylan and Bruce Springsteen and Tom Waits. They just don't make him like that anymore.
No question about it. No question about it. I love the fact that you guys celebrate his birthday every year. I went to the first couple.
Mm-hmm.
At
the now defunct
Quenchers.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yes. Oh, Quenchers with all their beer. They had like 900 different beers at Quenchers.
And now it's going to be a doctor's office.
Is that that's appropriate.
Yeah. Last time I was here, I needed a doctor.
Yeah, exactly.
Here I am.
I had what somebody told me, the best phone interview. I just told Chris the story. The best phone interview I've ever had the day after that first Zevon show. So we were all hanging out and drinking and having a good time. And sometimes when I'm singing and playing, you can't tell, like, oh, I've had a little too much. And I wake up with a hangover and be like, but I wasn't drunk. And that morning I woke up with a righteous hangover.
Yeah.
And I had this phone interview and I sat in a Einstein Brothers Bagels with my hand in my ear. And I ended up not getting the job. And I knew the guy who I was interviewing. And he's like, he's like, going into the in-person interviews, you were the top candidate. And in fact, that was the best phone interview I've ever had with anybody in my life.
And you were hungover after the. I was hungover that night. The next morning after that as
it was
well.
For the next 3 days.
Yeah. All right, hang on, guys. Okay, Chris Anderson and Charlie Shorter here. Androgynous Mustache. We'll talk more Warren Zevon. You guys should go out and check this out. These guys do a fantastic job. And it's the 9th annual Warren Zevon Bash, and it's the 23rd at Space in Evanston. Okay, let's take a quick break, and we got more coming up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here, and that's Warren Zevon. Warren Zevon, and we're singing the praises of Warren Zevon, as we should, one of the greatest singer-songwriters to ever live. The 9th annual Warren Zevon Birthday Bash is on January 23rd at Space in Evanston. Chris Anderson and Charlie Short from Androgynous Mustache are in studio with me, and they will be performing Warren Zevon songs in honor of his birthday. And coming up, we have the Stories That Matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Welcome back, guys.
Thanks.
Good to be here.
So tell me about the band. Who are you guys going to be playing with?
Pretty much the same crew we've had for a bit. It started out as a five-piece. It started out with me. The thing started with what we were talking about earlier. Reggie's music joint has this album night.
Yeah. Where bands perform full
classic
albums.
Records,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, God, this is 2010? No. Yeah. 9 or 10.
Because 2011 was the first birthday bash.
Right.
Right. Yeah, it was probably 2010, I guess.
Yeah.
And
September of 2010.
So we performed Excitable Boy. And we had Neil Alger. We had you. We had me. We had Mark
Winkler. Yeah.
Mark Winkler. Was Aslan on that?
No.
And we had Josh Bell on saxophone. And then we just gelled. And everybody was really keen on the music. And I said, I think I said, you know, we should do a night of Warren Zevon because nobody was doing it, man.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, anywhere.
Yeah.
And so we did it at Quenchers, brought in John Aslan, Brian Gephardt on saxophone. And it was great. We did 2 years at Quenchers. We did 2 years at the main stage.
And then Eddie started, I think, Eddie, at the main
stage. Edward Torres came in on accordion, who I played with in Millhouse in the Delafields. Then we did 1 year at Martyrs, and then right when we moved it to Space, it was just a really good fit.
Yeah.
And then we brought in Rachel Drew and Alton Smith and Dan Engine Throne, and so now we're operating as a 8-piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
great musicians too. I've had many of them on in studio here and great stuff. And do you guys add any songs each year?
Every year we add and subtract.
Yeah.
This year, I think This is our, I think we're looking at about 31, 32 songs.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, and we gotta crank, you know?
Yeah.
But Charlie and I were talking about this earlier. Like, I was listening, just put them on Spotify. Like, there are so many great, well-written, well-crafted tunes.
Absolutely.
And,
yeah,
I was in New York for Thanksgiving, and I had it on headphones, and
you're texting
one,
me.
Let's
do this one.
I was,
let's
yeah, do that one. Dead and Alive came on from his first record.
Yeah,
like this is on. This is, and I've never really been a spoiler, but yeah, that song is.
Do you guys bringing in this year. Have you guys done Backs Turned in the past?
No.
Because that's one of my favorite Warren Zevon. That's on the first album, too.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite Warren Zevon ballads of all time. I adore that song. It's such a great song. He's written, he was responsible for so many great songs. But the one that you guys play every year.
Here we go.
And we talk about it every year is the only Warren Zevon song that I hate. It's on Excitable Boy, and it's called Nighttime at the Switchin' Yard. And you guys, I remember the first birthday bash. I remember. I texted Scott Oaken because, you know, he was like, oh, they're playing Warren's. He couldn't come. So I'm there, and you guys start playing Nighttime at the Switchin' Yard. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You're playing Nighttime at the Switchin' Yard? So I texted Oaken, and I was like, these idiots are playing Nighttime at the Switchin' Yard. And he's like, what? You know, he couldn't believe it either. And again, really quickly, the story behind that song was the record executives, disco was popular at the time.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
It's off of Excitable Boy.
It is Excitable Boy. Mm-hmm. Didn't I say that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So the record executives were like, you know, maybe throw like a disco thing in there.
Yeah.
And the lyrics are just ridiculous, and the song is ridiculous. But you guys, when you guys play it, well, first of all, you dedicate it to me every year.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, even if I'm not there, and yeah. I won't be there next week, but I expect the dedication.
Yep,
you will have it.
And Rachel, by the way, last year sent me video of about 4 minutes of the song, because it goes on forever.
Yes.
Because it's the song where you guys, because it's fun to watch you guys play it, because you get to riff, you know what I mean? Like, you guys, everybody gets a solo, you go back, you know, everybody gets a solo and goes nuts. You guys play it for like 9 minutes.
Well, it wasn't planned. It's evolved into that, because the first time we did it, we kept on, like, it just kept going, like, I don't know where we're going to end this tune, man. Why are you solo? All right. We're not going to end? All right, you solo.
And wasn't it that Brian, when we played at Quenchers, you always have to have somebody on the floor, and I think Brian was on the floor.
Yeah.
And he's our saxophone player, and he just kept going.
Yeah.
You know, and so there wasn't any eye contact, and he just kept, like, looking at us, and we were,
And there was, like, hardly any monitors, and so I can't hear what's going on. I can see him, his saxophone moving, but he's got to be playing, so I'll just keep playing.
Yeah.
So it's turned into this epic thing now, and it's a really ridiculous song. But I love the fact that you guys dedicate it to me every year. And then, and I'm assuming that Rachel is probably going to video, because she was like she was like sort of behind you, and she, you know, moved the camera around. I got to see a good portion of one of the sax solos during it. But it's a ridiculous song. It's nighttime at the Switchin' Yard. But you guys have embraced it, and that's a. And that's a fun thing for sure. So the Warren Zevon birthday bash is on the 23rd at Space in Evanston, which is a really great room.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
And it's great. And it's the 9th annual. Can you believe you guys have been doing this for 9 years?
No.
God, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really crazy. Yeah. And now before we get out of here, Charlie, you do guitar repair, right?
Yes,
Let everybody know how, if they want to get their guitar worked on.
Sure. Yeah, you can just look. My website is charlieshortmusic.com. Really easy. Charlie, and short is like not tall. and there's a little button you can press if you want to have your guitar repaired. And I still do fancy, crazy stuff. I think I was finally finishing up like this huge project I did over the summer when I saw you last.
Mm-hmm.
I'll pretty much do any time people come to my house. And, you know, especially there's a lot of great guitar repair guys in the city. But, you know, if you need something fixed on the weekend when they're all closed or at night, you know, give me a call.
All right. Very cool. How long have you been doing that?
Probably 22 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
I started as a high school kid sweeping the floors, and then didn't go to college. I went. I just started fixing guitars.
That's how you. That was your school.
Yeah, 6 days a week at Guitar Works. That's how I met Steve and Johnny that way.
Oh yeah.
That's how I started listening to you, because I would listen to them, and then one night it was one of your shows, and you had Herschel Gordon Lewis.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And oh my God, the grandfather of Gore.
Right before the first
flashback.
The first flashback.
That was a long time ago, man. Yeah. That was 2002.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was playing with Preston all the time, and I would listen to Steve and Johnny on the way home, and I'm like, oh, they're not on. Who's this guy who likes the Gilmore Girls? This is great.
It's one thing is I am consistent. Yeah. I will say that. That was 2002 when I was and I was talking about the Gilmore Girls. I talked about Gilmore Girls the other day on this show.
Yeah.
That's how predictable I am. Well, thank you for listening.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Yeah. And then I got to know you outside of that.
That's
really cool.
Yeah.
So, Chris, always good to see you, man.
You too.
And so thank you guys for coming down. That's Androgynous Mustache. And they'll be performing the work of Warren Zevon, 32 songs worth of Warren Zevon right there. And that's always good stuff.
Bring a seatbelt.
Yeah.
Especially during nighttime at the Switchin' Yard.
Yeah. And tickets are still available.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Get your tickets.
For sure. Yeah.
Good. Very, very cool. And it's at Space in Evanston. And it's a 7:30 showtime, 6:30 the doors will open. And Space is located at 1245 Chicago Avenue in Evanston. Can you walk over, Charlie?
Yeah. I have a car now. So,
okay.
You know, I'm an adult. I will be driving.
Okay. Is it an Aston Martin?
No, it's just a Subaru.
Okay. All right. All right. You guys, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you.
All right. We'll take a break. The news is coming up in just a few seconds. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We are here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. We're going to get slammed with a little winter storm this weekend, so I thought maybe we could think about summer. And we're going to talk about the biggest summer songs from the past years. Like, what were the big songs of each summer going back a bunch of years? And maybe we'll play a little bit of those as well. And, of course, it's National Pizza Week, so we're going to talk some pizza a little bit later. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. And you can also talk or text that. And you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and Facebook.com. / Nick D Show is a great way to stay connected. All right. Every 2 weeks, we talk with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print. And we love to talk TV with Dan. And let's welcome Dan to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much, Nick.
How you been?
I'm okay. There's so much TV. I am genuinely looking forward to seeing what we're going to talk about tonight because... goodness, there are options.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to talk about, and we'll get to as much of it as we possibly can. I would like to start with a show that I am currently obsessed with, even though it is one of the stupidest things I've ever seen in my life, and one of the most ridiculous TV shows.
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, it's The Masked Singer, which I did not watch last night. I'm going to watch it when I get home in the morning. I can't explain why I love this show, and it's one of the stupidest things I've ever seen in my life. Have you watched it?
Oh, I most certainly have, and I've only watched about half of last night's episode. As a spoiler, Joel McHale joins the judging panel. So
is that right?
Significantly better. Yes, it is. But it is both a perfect venue/milieu for Joel McHale, and best of all, any time he talks, it takes precious seconds away from having to listen to Jenny McCarthy talk. So, she may be the worst judge in the history of reality television. I watch a fair amount of reality TV. I know that there is a lot that I have missed. She is useless on a level that I can't get my mind around.
Yeah.
And this is speaking as someone who grew up in formative years watching Singled Out, and Jenny McCarthy was, you know, important in my teen years.
Sure.
But goodness gracious,
yeah,
dead weight on this show.
Oh, I totally agree. But I don't know why, but for some reason, it just all of it. There's just something about this show. You know, I put it on my DVR just as a lark. You know. And I can't stop watching this. I'm just like, I'm absolutely mesmerized by it. And I, as I'm watching it, I'm like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life. And let me, as a little background, Dan, I happen to have a real, weakness for people dressed in mascot costumes because I think it's hilarious. Like, every time I see a mascot at a sporting event on the sideline or something, I crack up. Like, I laugh out loud every time I see a mascot. And essentially, that's what this is. It's just people coming out, like, in mascot costumes singing. And I don't know where the hell did this show come from?
Well, the answer is South Korea is where it came from.
Oh, okay.
And it absolutely has the look and feel of a transplanted Asian reality TV format.
Yeah.
And
it
feels like it. And it was a massive hit in Korea. And I think I can understand why. We've talked about our shared love of gritty. And so I'm sure I have some of that as well. I think that the costumes really are astounding, and I don't know that necessarily the show has given enough credit to the people who are designing these costumes, which are freakish and magnetic and wonderful. Fox announced this show at Summer Press Tour, TCA Press Tour last year, and they hadn't announced it, they hadn't said anything, they hadn't said what they were doing a panel for, and during a lunch break, they basically brought out these costumes and put them on mannequins around the stage, and we had to just stare at them for like 45 minutes trying to figure out what they were even there for, and it worked. It absolutely did the job, and I don't understand the show's core purpose, and this is a problem for me, that they keep talking about how people will, quote-unquote, succeed at the show, and I don't know what success is. I don't know what it means if somebody guesses correctly or doesn't guess correctly who the contestants are. So there's this big thing at the heart of the show that is absent for me, and yet I can't stop watching either.
I'm so glad I'm not alone on this, because I posted on my Facebook page and social media that I was watching this show, and I don't understand why I'm completely obsessed with it. And the responses I got, lots of people are watching this show, and lots of people are actually making the effort to try and guess who is underneath those masks, and have like complicated theories, and they're trying to figure out the mystery. And this is like, people are genuinely loving this show, and it's ridiculous. So
yeah, I don't know if I'm necessarily getting into that. Like last week's was easy. The reveal, I was fine, even though Jenny McCarthy couldn't figure it out and still took credit for getting it right, even though she totally didn't.
Right, she didn't.
I've been getting angry about people saying that she got it half right. No. If Cheech and Chong are two different people,
right,
and you guess Cheech and Chong and then say no Cheech, you got it wrong.
Yeah.
So, sorry, Jenny McCarthy, zero credit.
Right.
The first week, the first week, apparently, if you paid attention to his dance moves, you could have gotten it. I didn't. Lots of people are watching. It is doing tremendously well. It is a guarantee that we will get more seasons. And, I don't know that it is a show with a endless shelf life. Like, already the half of last night's episode that I watched, because we've seen all of the characters before, there isn't that shock factor. There isn't the, oh my god, this is the strangest, most absurd thing I've ever seen factor.
Right,
it's
right.
Just, it's just, oh look, it's crazy deer guy in the gas mask again,
right,
but I've seen him before.
Right.
So, I don't know that I'm going to be able to watch this forever, and I have yet to set a DVR season pass recording for it, and yet each week I do manually go and go, okay, I'll watch another week of The Masked Singer, and I suspect I will keep doing that.
Yeah, that's the first thing I'm going to do when I get home in the morning, is I'm going to watch last night's episode. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And I'm not kidding, Dan. The first time, the first episode when I was sitting there watching it, I was shaking my head on my couch going, why am I watching this, and why do I love it? It's so weird. It's just so weird.
It is fundamentally weird, and it does, I think it speaks to the general insanity of our times and our moments, And there we are, and boy, Jenny McCarthy is awful, but I'm constantly amused at how much Robin Thicke sounds like his father.
Yeah,
that is a sad, amusing distraction.
Yeah.
Kim Ji-young's okay, and Nicole Scherzinger is okay, and Joel McHale this week is much better.
Good, good. I'm looking forward to it. Okay, I just had to get your thoughts on it because I've just been confused. I've been confused as to why I'm obsessed with it. So I need it.
I assumed we would be starting with that one. I guessed that was coming.
All right. Well, so listen, let's do a quick wrap up because I haven't talked to you since the Golden Globes were handed out. Let's talk in general. First of all, what did you think of the show? It was way too long. I know that much.
It was way too long, and they have to figure out what their priorities are, and they need to decide, and that's not for me to say. But once they add a second Lifetime Achievement Award, well, having Carol Burnett up there is awesome, and she can talk as much as she wants, and that's fantastic. And having Jeff Bridges there doing whatever Jeff Bridges was doing is fantastic.
Yeah.
But you know that both of those things are going to take about 40 minutes out of the show, and then you need to figure out, okay, well, what are we doing? Are we going 3.5 hours? What are we doing?
Yeah.
And they haven't figured that out. That bugs me. The fact that they continue not to appreciate TV despite the clout that TV brings to the show annoys me as a TV critic. So the fact that The Americans won drama series, which was awesome and fantastic, and this wonderful moment that took place 30 minutes into the show. They were giving out supporting actor awards after that. They were just tossing awards around to the TV shows, and what should or could have been one of the night's biggest moments wasn't even an afterthought. It was like, okay, whatever, let's just give an award to The Americans and go on to the next thing. That bugs the heck out of me. But I thought that Sandra Oh and Andy Samberg were decent, and I think that where they kind of maybe lacked, they would be better if someone let them do it again next year. I think with a year of extra comfort under her belt, Sandra Oh would be just a year better, and I thought she was good, but she also looked terrified at times.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'd like to see more from, you know, from her. So it wasn't a great show, but I thought it had moments. I've seen some people hate it entirely. I had serious problems with the number of the movie winners, and so that bugged me and made me a little disheartened, but it was also inevitable, so nothing to be done about that.
Yeah, I thought, you know, Sandra Oh and Andy Samberg did the best they could, but I thought the material, I thought the writing was really weak, I didn't think the opening monologue was very funny. I thought the bit with Jim Carrey sitting in the movie section instead of the TV section was funny. That was, I think, the funniest part of the opening for me. But I just thought it was kind of flat. And again, you know, like we talk about all the time, Dan, you know, whoever hosts this thing, they're gone for a good stretch of time. I mean, you know, you're basically opening your monologue, and then you maybe do a couple of more bits throughout the night, and then that's it. And so, you know, and that again is one of the things that happens every year at the Globes, where the host just goes missing for a huge chunk of time.
Well, the host goes missing, and also there's no more time for patter from the presenters, and you get, in some cases, some genuinely significant people doing nothing. Like, Taylor Swift was there, and Taylor Swift is huge, and all that she was there for was to stand next to Idris Elba and to blush when he said that she looked good.
Yeah.
There had to have been material that was written that they cut, and Taylor Swift must have gotten off that stage going, did they not know I'm the biggest artist in pop music, and they did absolutely nothing with me? Astounding.
Yeah.
And then, you know, other people, like literally William H. Macy,
right,
and Felicity Huffman got up there and said, witty banter, witty banter,
right,
witty banter,
exactly,
three times and gave an award.
Yeah, exactly. That was one of my actually favorite moments of the night. Dan, hang on, okay? We got to take a break, all right?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. We got a lot of TV to talk about. He writes for the Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in, 312-981-7200. We're going to get a little summer stuff in here and talk about the biggest summer songs dating back years back. And I remember several specific songs that were so big during summer's past. And we'll talk about that because maybe we can think about summer while we're getting smashed with some winter weather this weekend. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Dan Feinberg is the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we welcome Dan back to the show. All right, Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, you reviewed a bunch of stuff, so let's start with some of the things that I'm kind of interested in. Yeah, I have not watched it yet, but the episode one is on my DVR, and I will probably end up watching it tomorrow, and I'm really curious about The Passage.
The Passage is, for those who do not know, based on the first book in the Justin Cronin revisionist vampire series that premiered 10, 15 years ago, and it has been pared down to be verging on unrecognizable to the books. If, you know, anyone is deeply invested, they probably should have known that those books were not really going to be translatable to a broadcast television, I don't know, schedule, budget, running time, standards and practices, content warnings, et cetera, et cetera. It was never going to come to TV as the book. It's okay once you accept it's not going to be the book, and it's not going to be as dark or involving as it probably should be. It's kind of a road trip thing with Mark Paul Gosselaar as a military veteran who takes a liking to a small girl who the government wants to use for medical testing involving a virus thingy that could cure all disease but could also turn people into vampires. So, you know, side effects as such things go. It's not as scary as it should be. It's not as exciting as it should be. And it's strange that the best part of the show is the relationship with Mark Paul Gosselaar and Saniya Sidney is the young actress, and she's very, very good. It's decent, and in a year in which the broadcast networks have done nothing at all of any ambition whatsoever, at least they kind of tried to adapt this unadaptable look, even if they discovered it was unadaptable. I kind of applaud that. It's not great, and I think probably in a different era where broadcast television was maybe better, it wouldn't stand out as being decent and it wouldn't really stick out. But I think in this day and age, it's what counts for a broadcast drama trying to do something. And so I appreciate that, I guess.
Okay. When I saw the commercials for it, I was intrigued by it. I've not read the books. I wasn't familiar with the books. I was intrigued by it. And it reminded me a little bit just in terms of what it reminded me a little bit of The Strain. Except less, I think, less gory, obviously, but it reminded me of The Strain in that way.
I think it's definitely less gory, less intense. I think it lacks the kind of frequently inspired grossness that The Strain had. Yeah. Their version of vampires, they're all just sort of dark-eyed and veiny, and they love blood, and that's fine. There really was some creativity to what The Strain did. The Strain did a lot of awful stuff as well, but there was some fantastic makeup work and stuff that show attempted. So I give that show credit, despite all the things that were bad about it. Now, of course, one of the things that undermined pretty much the entire run of The Strain was the really, really bad young actors as Corey Stahl's sons, multiple of them. And so all credit to The Passage for having cast exactly one child actor and having that one child actor actually be great.
Yeah.
So, if The Strain had been as successful attempting to cast the little Zach, whatever his name was, it might have been a much more successful and well-received show, and yet they couldn't do that for some reason.
Mark Paul Gosselaar, is it wrong for me to miss pitch?
In some conversations it would be wrong because people wouldn't agree with you, but if you're having this conversation with me, that absolutely he was fantastic.
He was great on that show.
I think he has done a very good job of adapting his career since the Saved by the Bell days. Obviously NYPD Blue was the biggest part of that that gave him instant credibility, but he's chosen some interesting projects. He's chosen some projects that accentuate the strengths that he has as an actor. He's a sturdy leading man, and I think that is what he is also here. I wonder where Pitch would be if it were in its third season now. Yeah. I would still be watching it happily, and Kylie Bunbury should be in everything, and yep. I don't know why she isn't.
I agree. Okay, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we're going to take a break for the news. When we come back, we got more TV talk with Dan after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about the biggest songs of each summer, years past. Thinking about summer because we're going to get some pretty good winter weather over the weekend. So I thought maybe we'd get into a summer mindset, and we'll talk about that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And Dan Feinberg is with us for his biweekly visit, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine is back. And
yes, it is. And
it's awesome. It's still great, just on a different network, but it's still hilarious.
That was pretty much my review as well. That was the only purpose of my review was to check in and say, yeah, it hasn't changed. You can just check it out, and it's still one of the funniest shows on broadcast television, and it's probably better off on NBC than on Fox, where who knows what Fox's brand is going to be going forward. But you can pair Brooklyn Nine-Nine with The Good Place, and that's a good hour of TV.
Yes, it is. It's a great hour of TV. And, you know, those I remember for me, there was like that heyday of NBC Thursday night comedies back in the day when it was back-to-back-to-back. Like they had like a two-hour block of great comedies all on Thursday nights on NBC. And it kind of that's kind of reminding me a little bit of that, of those days.
I think that NBC has a bunch of good comedies, and they're not even currently Superstore is on the shelf, at least short term. And I know that there are people out there who thought that AP Bio got good by the end of its first season. I would love to find the time someday to go and watch the second half of that season, because I got tired of it around 6 or 7 episodes in, but. Mm-hmm. Some people really like it. But anyway, if you just go Superstore, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, The Good Place, that's a pretty good round of comedies.
Yeah,
so I think NBC is doing quite well, and Brooklyn fits in with the tone of what the network is doing. And I've seen last week's episode and this week's episode. I've seen the first two of the season, and they're really just both very good. And Brooklyn Nine-Nine, nothing different from what they were doing over on Fox. It's just a good, funny show with a fantastic ensemble.
That's right. There you go. I just want to remind everybody, it's on. It's back. So, but you guys have to turn on NBC and not Fox. So, there's a very popular network sitcom, as we were talking about network sitcoms, and it's The Goldbergs. And now there's a spinoff of The Goldbergs called Schooled. Tell me about that.
Well, Schooled is indeed. It's now the 90s set spinoff of The Goldbergs. Anyone who watches The Goldbergs knows that it's set in a kind of blurry, indeterminate 1980-something, and so this one is set in 1990-something. It was originally introduced as a backdoor pilot in an episode last season that focused on basically the gym coach, and the gym coach played by Brian Callen and the principal played by Tim Meadows, who we have discussed our mutual appreciation for.
Absolutely.
On several occasions.
Yep.
They realized rather correctly that it couldn't work as a show about those two characters, because they're kind of supporting characters who shouldn't be fronting a show, and so they moved one of the characters from the original show over, AJ Michalka's Lainey Lewis, as basically a young new music teacher. I thought the first episode was kind of a mess and not very good. The second episode, which aired this week, I thought was an improvement. I thought there are still problems with the show. It doesn't have the kind of personal touch that the Goldbergs have. But I think that the second episode kind of showed how it could be a workable show. They introduced a bunch of new supporting characters. I wish ABC had been able to send us a second episode to see all of them, including Brett Dyer, who some people will know from Jane the Virgin. He plays a potential love interest and a cool young teacher, and then just a wild assortment of other teachers at the school. Anna Gasteyer appeared. Clancy Brown, for no reason in particular, was there other than why not?
Yeah.
And so I'm not really sure that the 90s-ness of it is being handled as well. And again, it lacks the sort of autobiographical touches that the original show had. And they keep trying to reach and at the over the closing credits have the real people from Adam Goldberg's past talking to the actors who play them. And, you know, that's them trying. That's them saying, okay, this, if it seems outlandish, it's actually real. And I'm not sure I wholly buy it. But the second episode was much closer to being a TV show I would watch on a regular basis than the first one was. So I'll be sticking with it. The ABC has so many comedies, and some of them are fantastic. I still think that, I mean, Black-ish this week had its best episode in a year or more. Just an amazing episode of TV and a reminder of how good that show is when it's good. I think that Speechless remains one of the better network sitcoms on TV. Sometimes Fresh Off the Boat does good work. You know, there are a lot of good comedies on both broadcast TV in general and on ABC in specific. So I don't know that Schooled is right now even close to the upper tier on ABC. I don't think it's probably as good as either Single Parents or The Kids Are All Right is the other big family period comedy that they have on ABC now. And I don't know it's as good as either of them. But again, second episode better than the first. So progress.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's see. Now, so what are you thinking of we have SNL, a new SNL this weekend. Rachel Brosnahan is going to be hosting it, and I think she's going to be great on the show. What do you think?
You never know. It's to me, it almost never comes down to whether the hosts are capable of great.
Yeah.
It comes down to if they have any ideas for them, and so. Do I think that Rachel Brosnahan has the ability to be great? Absolutely.
Yeah.
She is both genuinely funny, and as Mrs. Maisel shows, she's capable of going utterly gung-ho into broad characters. I think that she could be good if they give her things to do, and I will be sad if they don't give her things to do, but I'm already getting sad thinking of Robert De Niro coming out and reading cue cards badly as Robert Mueller, so I hope that I hope they can resist the temptation to do that.
I know it's been not a great season so far. I thought the Matt Damon. I thought the last episode was actually pretty strong. The Matt Damon episode was really strong, and of course the Weezer sketch went completely viral, and it was hilarious. And so you know, I thought that was the strongest episode of the season thus far.
And by a lot, I think. I don't know that I could even think of a worthwhile second favorite episode of the season. That one was a good episode, and so you know, maybe it got them on track, or maybe they were just inspired to work with Matt Damon, or you know, they were also having a lot of fun around Christmas time, and they were doing a lot of Christmas sketches, and so you know, maybe that got their creative juices going. I don't know, but again, Rachel Brosnahan could be good. And knock on wood, I don't know. I'm so terrified because just watching what's happening on the news on a daily basis and having no confidence that SNL is capable of doing anything good with it, it's depressing.
Yeah. And also, you know, on that Matt Damon episode, you know, Angel, every boxer's girlfriend from every boxing movie made an appearance, and that's always a highlight in my life. So.
And I'm right there with you loving Heidi Gardner, but that can't be all that they can think of for her to do. And yet so often, it's like, I think that was the third appearance from that character.
Yeah.
Come on. She has to have other things. Let her do other things. Don't just keep going back to that well over and over again, as funny as it is.
Yeah. I think she's great, really great. And then the following week is James McAvoy. That should be pretty interesting because I think he's enormously talented. And again, I hope they get to, they give him some good writing, as you were saying.
He is. I mean, as anyone who has seen the not very good Split knows, he is an actor who is capable of doing almost anything.
Yeah.
So I would like to believe that they could be inspired by his versatility. And give him things to do also. And there's no way of knowing who is going to inspire them from week to week. And you just get surprised when an Ariana Grande episode turns out to be a surprising pleasure and all impressive and stuff because,
yeah,
like, who would have thought that would be the person who would inspire them?
Right.
And yet she did. So who knows?
Okay. Well, we'll see. And I watch it every week anyway. I'm a sucker for punishment, I guess. But I watch it every week, and I always find something. There's at least something in there that's pretty funny. And I'm looking forward to the next couple of weeks. So, all right. Tell me about I Am the Knight. I've been seeing so much advertisement for this one. It's on TNT, and Chris Pine is in it, and Patty Jenkins directed it. So there you go.
She directed the first two of the six episodes. It is a six-episode limited series that is based to some very, very, very limited degree on the life of Fauna Hodel, who learned in 1965 that her father was George Hodel, who was a famous Hollywood abortionist, doctor, party thrower, man about town, who also was significantly accused by his son of being the Black Dahlia killer. And so there's that as the backdrop. Chris Pine plays a reporter who is not a real character and whose story this basically becomes. And that's the kind of thing that frustrates me. And it frustrated me throughout the five of six episodes I've seen. It's hard to tell whose story it is. And when you have two characters, one of them is a real person with an interesting real personal journey that she went through as a human. She wrote a memoir about it. And the other one is a fictional composite who didn't even do the things that he's getting credit for within the series. It annoys me when the show chooses over and over again to be the story of the fictional composite almost completely because he's played by Chris Pine. And
right.
That's not to say Chris Pine isn't actually really, really good. He's sort of rough and tumble, and he's funny, and it's a really good performance from Chris Pine. And
okay.
It happens
Dan,
that the actors...
Dan, hang on for one second. We got to take a break. I want to come back, and we'll pick it up right from there, okay?
Excellent. Sure.
Okay, cool. Dan Feinberg is with us. We got to take a break here. And then when we come back, Dan will finish telling us about I Am the Knight, which is on TNT. We'll take a break and be back right after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. Let's get back to our conversation with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us biweekly to talk TV. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And before the break, Dan, you were telling us about I Am the Knight and talking about the performance of Chris Pine as we had to take a break.
Indeed. It snuck up on me that last break.
Yeah, no, it snuck up on me too, trust me.
So yes, Chris Pine, very, very good, and kind of takes over to some degree because the young actress who plays Fauna Hodel, India Isley, is only okay. And I don't know if she's only okay because the character's not very well written here, or if she's a limited actress. She's relatively inexperienced. She will be significant to some subset of viewers because she's Olivia Hussey's daughter. And in certain moments, anybody who had to watch the Zeffirelli Romeo and Juliet in high school will be briefly distracted by the fact that she resembles her mother to a shocking degree.
Yeah.
But also then lots of people will not get that resemblance because some people don't know who Olivia Hussey is, and that's okay. I go right to
Black Christmas when I think of Olivia Hussey.
Totally valid.
That's
and,
what I go
and probably, I'm trying to, boy, Black Christmas is a great movie of its type, but Romeo and Juliet is good, and yeah. Basically everyone had to watch that in high school English,
yeah.
and no one had to watch Black Christmas in high school English.
No, they didn't.
For whatever reason.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's James Ellroy light. I was disappointed by it. I've seen 5 of 6 episodes, and after 5 episodes, I don't know what it is that I'm supposed to care about happening in the finale, and that's not a good sign for a close-ended, limited series.
No. Okay. All right. Now, you had an IndieWire contribution, and the topic was pick the best, most addictive reality competition shows. And, well, I mean, you know, I mean, I think you probably know what my choice is. And it's...
It was 50% of my choices. I gave two answers. And
yeah.
The first of them was your choice, which would be Top Chef.
Correct. Yes.
Which I've just been enjoying so much these past 2 weeks. I don't know. Like, I don't think it's been better these past few weeks than it's been at other times, though it's been very good, and all of the disasters and restaurant wars in front of the house.
Fantastic.
Good TV.
Fantastic. It was fantastic. And I love that they mixed it up this season, and they sprung the surprise on the chef testants by doing restaurant wars so early in the season. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, I did, but also it meant that they were a little bit less comfortable in the format because they'd only been on for a couple weeks.
Mm.
And then maybe that's why it became such a mess. Like if you do it at top eight, everyone knows you're doing it.
Right.
But you have eight contestants who have been doing this week in and week out and who have proven they have a certain under pressure confidence. And I didn't feel that was the case. And then the next week I thought the whole botch of the speedy return from Last Chance Kitchen and all that, I didn't think that was great, but I've just been enjoying watching it. Like, for whatever reason, I've been looking forward to that show more week to week this season than ever before. I don't know why.
I'm having a great time watching it. I will say this, that whole Last Chance Kitchen thing that they did last week, I could not have been happier that Brother went home. I could not have been happier. And I thought it was hilarious that this is a competition between all these chefs, and here comes this interloper, and they immediately all gang up and want this guy out. And I was so happy that Brother got booted.
I just don't think they understood either why it was happening
right
at this part in the show.
It
didn't feel like the right time to do that. So whatever, it was a minor misstep, and I definitely thought last week's episode was across the board less good than the multi-part restaurant wars.
Yeah,
but. So
are you rooting for anybody in particular? Or?
I don't know that I am at this point. I think same as last season, I wasn't hating anyone, and I think I'm taking that this season as well. It feels like a lot of them are making food that I would probably want to eat, and at least at this stage in the competition, that's enough for me. Who are you rooting for?
I got a couple. I'm narrowing down. I like Adrienne a lot. I think she's great, and I love how she took command during Restaurant Wars, expediting. I thought she was good. I think she makes good food, and I like her as well. I like Michelle, and I also like Eric. Of the two African American guys with big beards that they've cast,
I like both of them. But again, I think I like all of. I really think to some level I like all of the contestants this season. There are a few who I think probably are in a little bit more over their heads than others, but they seem to be making good food. That was my secondary answer, and then Survivor, which
right
is just the most resilient reality format there is, and every season something new and fun happens, and I still love me some Survivor, and it astounds me that we've had 37 seasons of it. It makes no sense, but time flies.
I remember in the summer of 2000 when that thing premiered, everybody I know went crazy over it, and people have still consistently watch it. Now, speaking of reality shows, Big Brother, the celebrity Big Brother, starts on Monday, And it, you know, again, interesting choice of celebrities to be stuck in the room. Are you looking forward to that?
No, I am. I am really not. I thought I really dislike the cast that they chose. There is not a single person in that cast who I want to watch. I understand that there's the fun of egos butting heads, and there's all of that, but it really helps if there's, you know, in a celebrity season, it really helps if there's any one of the contestants who I find interesting or appealing at all, and I don't. Fortunately, in this case, it premieres next week, but I'm going to Sundance at the end of next week and then going straight from Sundance into the winter press tour.
Oh, wow.
So the chances of my keeping up with Celebrity Big Brother are close to nil, so you can tell me if it's good.
Yeah.
But I am not going to have the time to watch. All I would like is for Anthony Scaramucci to be humiliated in whatever the most public form possible is. I would like for him to fall on his face over and over again and to lose humiliatingly. That would be nice, but I don't need to watch it.
I do have one celebrity that I'm rooting for, and because I happen to love Tom Green, so that's the only one. I'm not thrilled with the celebrities. I mean, I'll watch it because it's Big Brother, and I will watch it. But I happen to really love Tom Green, and so that's my vested interest is Tom Green. So.
But I don't know if you know the answer. Who is Tom Green today?
Stand-up comedian.
But like, who is he today? Like, what? Like, when he was the crazy Freddy Got Fingered young lunatic punk, I knew what he was. Like, yeah. I knew what his shtick was. I knew what his personality was, and all of that. Today, what is he?
I actually happen to know Tom.
Okay.
So I'm rooting for him. You know, I'm a huge fan, and he started to do stand up about 10 years ago. And so he came through town. I had him on my show. I've been, you know, in contact with Tom for all those years. And I mean, he's a middle-aged dude now who does stand up, and that's pretty much all he does.
But is he kind of insane and the rule defying in the way he was?
No, not at all.
15 years ago?
No. It's pretty standard stand up stuff. I mean, he's funny, but he's not nearly as insane as he was back in the MTV heyday when he was just, as far as I'm concerned, a genius.
And if you put that guy in the Celebrity Big Brother house, right, I would be really curious to see what it would do.
Yeah.
I guess I'm curious to see who he is now, but it's still not enough to watch.
I know. But maybe he'll dust off some of the old classics and annoy the hell out of everybody in the house. We'll see. All right, Dan, we will talk to you again in a couple of weeks. And will you be in 2 weeks now? You will be at Sundance, correct?
I will be back from Sundance.
Oh, back from
We're
Sundance.
Probably going to need to slightly reschedule. We'll figure it out. But yeah, it's basically I'm going to be gone for a long time, and there'll be lots to talk about.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we'll figure it out. But there'll be lots to talk about.
Got it. Okay, Dan, thanks a lot, man. There you go.
Sure thing, Nick.
Okay, there you go. Dan Feinberg, everybody, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He's got a busy, busy, busy time coming up. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. Always a lot of fun to talk to Dan. All right, we'll take a break here for the news on 720 WGN. Going to hear three songs by this person? Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. That's one artist, three songs. Vic, any guess as to who that was?
Let me catch my breath because I'm just cracking up that you called him this person. No, I don't know who that is.
That was Leonard Nimoy.
Oh.
Yeah. Mr. Spock.
You know, I've heard some very strange songs by him. I've seen some even stranger music videos.
I'm assuming Bilbo Baggins. We'll probably hear Baggins at some point because that's the one that everybody knows.
Well, I get an uneasy feeling when I watch that. Do you get that feeling? Seriously, it's just strange.
You get an uneasy feeling?
Yeah. Was that normal when it was released, do you think that...
Back in those days?
Really?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
People blowing weed all over the place.
Yeah.
And, you know. Yep. So, but yeah, so that was Leonard Nimoy. So if you want to jump in here, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And coming up, we're going to be talking about the summer songs, the biggest summer songs for each year. Because we would like to maybe think about summer now. To get our minds off of what we're going to get over the weekend, which is going to be some snow and some cold. So we'll think about summer songs. Does anybody remember songs that maybe you listened to in the summer? Dan, was there anyone that popped into your head?
Especially when I was paying more attention to music when I was a younger man, you know, I most associated summer music with weddings.
Yeah.
So kind of the wedding song that featured most prominently when a lot of my friends were getting married were, and it's not a good song and it's a guilty pleasure, but the Black Eyed Peas, I've Got a Feeling, because it was played pretty much at every wedding I attended for 3 years. And it was always kind of fun because it brought people who might not dance on the dance floor. And then the people who dance at weddings always seem to have like a shtick to it. And I was very happy when I attended a Jewish wedding and I could actually sing the line Molotov, and actually mean it. And, that's kind of a song I associate with summer.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, I have the summer songs. These hot tunes are ranked based on each track's performance on the Billboard Hot 100 during the summer. For the period of 1991 and before, prior to the advent of the Nielsen Music Radio Monitoring points of sale data, the rankings are based on an inverse point system with the week's number one earning the greatest value and week's number 100 earning the least. For the years corresponding with the Nielsen Music data, 1992 onward, the ranks are based on accumulated radio and sales points and points in the other data that are included in the Hot 100 during those respective years. So, let's see. I go to the year of my birth. What was the what was the number one summer song? Wow, this is pretty good. I'm looking at the top. Boy, this top 10 of the summer, and I was born in the summer. So this is not bad right here, because the number one song of the number one summer song in 1965 was "I Can't Get No Satisfaction" by the Rolling Stones. That's pretty good. And then number two would be "I Can't Help Myself," Sugar Pie, Honey Bunch by the Four Tops. Three, "I Got You, Babe" by Sonny and Cher. And you didn't have to hear it every single morning like Bill Murray did in Groundhog Day. "Help" by the Beatles. "I'm Henry VIII, I Am," Herman's Hermits. And also you didn't have to hear Patrick Swayze sing it 9,000 times like Whoopi Goldberg had to in Ghost. "Mr. Tambourine Man" by the Byrds. "What's New Pussycat" by Tom Jones. So that's a good list. Dan, you were born in 81, right?
Yes.
So the summer songs of 1981. Let's see what we got here. Okay. Hold on. Okay. Oh. Dan, are you ready?
Yes.
"Jesse's Girl" by Rick Springfield. Song is a jam. Some of the other ones that were hot that summer of 1981, the year you were born, "Betty Davis Eyes" by Kim Carnes. "Endless Love" by Diana Ross and Lionel Richie. The theme from The Greatest American Hero, "Believe It or Not." By
okay.
"Slow Hand" by the Pointer Sisters. "The One That You Love" by Air Supply. "I Don't Need You" by Kenny Rogers. "Elvira" by the Oak Ridge Boys. "Elvira." "Queen of Hearts" by Juice Newton. And "All Those Years Ago" by George Harrison. Yeah. Vic, what year were you born again?
Same, 81.
You were born in 81?
71.
All right. Hold on a second. 71.
By the way, Dan, while he's looking, that, I don't know, I was going to say it was Jam. Maybe it's not a Jam, but Believe It or Not, I'm Walking On. What was it?
The Greatest American Hero.
Yeah. Do you know that, Dan? That's a, I can still sing that song.
I am familiar with it, thanks to entries on Wildcard Wednesday. Yes, it is a very catchy tune.
Right?
Yeah, and George Costanza does a bit on Seinfeld.
Oh, really?
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Oh. That's funny. Where can he be? Believe it or not, he's not home.
That's funny.
That's his,
was
that's
that
his
out
answering
when that
machine.
TV show?
No. This was years later.
Because that was
in the 90s.
Be at least a decade later.
1971, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart by the Bee Gees was the big summer song. That's a great song. It's Too Late and I Feel the Earth Move by Carole King. Ooh, this is good.
Well, it was 71. Indian
Reservation by the Raiders. You've Got a Friend by James Taylor. Again, written by Carole King.
Right.
Mr. Big Stuff by Gene Knight. Take Me Home Country Roads by John Denver. Don't Pull Your Love by Hamilton, Joe Frank, and Reynolds. Dragon Line by Tommy James. Treat Her Like a Lady by Cornelius Brothers and Sister Rose. And Signs by Five Man Electrical Band.
I'd take the John Denver one.
Yeah. Signs says you got to have a membership card.
Oh, that song's good, too. Yeah, that song. I love that song. Who sang that?
The Five Man Electrical Band.
Mm.
And then was it Tesla who did the remake?
See, I was thinking it's not the Black Crowes, is it?
No, I think it was Tesla who did a remake of Signs in the 80s.
That's the one I
Tesla did
with.
Do a cover.
Yeah.
Tesla.
Tesla did a cover of it, yeah.
Mm. So. I do like that cover. I'll have to listen to the original.
No, the original's classic. It's
mm-hmm.
All right.
It's so funny that you're doing this tonight because coincidentally, right before I came in here tonight, I was putting my shoes on in my apartment and I checked the weather on my iPhone and it said 29 degrees here in Chicago.
Yeah.
And I thought, I wonder how warm it is in Curacao. I used to live on this island and it was 78 at right around midnight. and I added the Curacao weather to my iPhone so I could just at least... I don't know why some psychiatrist out there can explain it to me, but I thought at least I'll be aware that it's warm somewhere.
It is warm somewhere, yeah, because it's going to get pretty cold over the weekend. The beginning of the work weekend, Sunday, it's supposed to be really, really cold.
We'll
so, yeah,
get the jackets out.
Just keep looking at your weather update, Vic. It'll make you feel warm.
Right.
And hopefully some of these summer songs will make you feel warm. If you want to jump in here, it's 312-981 if you remember any songs of the summer. Here's Doc in Kansas City. Hey, Doc.
Hey, good morning. I graduated from high school in 71, and you could drink at age 18 in Kansas. And it seems to me that the summer of 72, that I couldn't walk into a bar that summer without hearing Smoke on the Water.
Ah, Smoke on the Water is not on. It wasn't in the top 10. But it was probably
on the charts for months and not weeks.
Yeah.
So hell, it may have started on the charts in March that year.
Well, it's the number one song of the summer of 1972 is "Alone Again, Naturally" by Gilbert O'Sullivan. And "Brandy, You're a Fine Girl" by Looking Glass. "Lean on Me" by Bill Withers. "It's Too Late to Turn Back Now." Cornelius Brothers and Sister Rose, "Long Cool Woman in a Black Dress" by the Hollies, "Daddy Don't You Walk So Fast." Oh my God, "Daddy Don't You Walk So Fast" by Wayne Newton.
This sounds like PCU, like you could trap people into a room with some of these songs.
Yeah, well, this is like the top 40 stuff, you know. So that's one of the reasons why "Smoke on the Water" wouldn't be on there. I mean, obviously, "Smoke on the Water" is a very, very popular song, but. This was the top 40 stuff that they used to play back then. Doc, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin says, "Good Vibrations by the Beach Boys is a great summer song." Ken F. in Milwaukee says, "Tiny Tim, Tiptoe Through the Tulips." 804 area code says, "Tighter, Tighter" by Alive and Kicking was a big summer hit produced by Tommy James in the late 60s, early 70s. Great show. Thanks to all. "Tighter, Tighter" by Alive and Kicking, or written by Tommy James, produced by Tommy James, one of my favorite songs. I mean, well, Tommy James, Dan, you know how much I love Tommy James.
Yeah.
One of my, the first, musical artist that I really obsessed over as a little kid. As a little kid, I loved Tommy James and the Shondells. They were by far the first band or artist that I became obsessed with music-wise was Tommy James and the Shondells. And Tommy James, Tighter, Tighter by Alive and Kicking, was also an important reference that I wrote into the vinyl shop. Like Tighter, Tighter by Alive and Kicking was mentioned about 5 times in that play. And it's a pretty obscure song. Not a lot of people know. And Alive and Kicking was just sort of this band that Tommy James put together. And they never had any other, I think they only had the one album and they only had the one hit. But I threw it into the vinyl shop, and it's the closing song that we used at the curtain call. 773 area code says, Hot Fun in the Summertime by Sly and the Family Stone. Bobby Collins would kick off his summer programming with that song. All summertime songs. We're talking about songs that were popular in the summer for each year. And, yeah, we'll get to some more of this. At 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Thinking summer songs. And, we'll take a break and we'll come back and talk more. He's got a very peculiar singing style. Glenn, for Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday! Choosing some Leonard Nimoy. And that's If I Had a Hammer. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And if you would like to join us, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Wanted to think a little summery stuff since it's going to be so sort of wicked over the weekend in terms of winter weather. So we're talking about songs that were really, really popular in the summer. Summer songs that you remember. 312-981-7200. So I'm looking at the year 1999, and the reason I'm looking at the year 1999 is because in the summer of 1999, in August of 1999, I just mentioned the play The Vinyl Shop, we took the play to New York, and we spent 3 weeks in August of 1999 in New York and performing The Vinyl Shop for the New York Fringe Festival, which was in Lower Manhattan. And so we were in New York for 3 weeks in the summer of 1999, and went to a lot of bars, hung out at one in particular, but went to a lot of bars and, you know, walking around in Manhattan. And this is the song that I remember that was playing everywhere in 1999, everywhere. And I'm looking on the top 10 here, and it's not on the top 10. Of 1999, which I'm completely shocked. But here's the song, Dan, that was playing. You could hear it coming out of apartment buildings. You could hear it in bars. It was played everywhere, in restaurants. You go anywhere, pizza places. It was that damn smooth song by Santana and that Rob Thomas character. It was we couldn't escape it. We couldn't escape it, you know. It was like, oh, God. And then, like, you're walking. I remember just, like, well, you know, like, we're in a bar, and it comes on the jukebox. I'm like, why would anybody voluntarily play this damn song? It was everywhere, but it did not make this. It was not popular in the top 10, according to Billboard.
It looks like it charted at number one starting in October.
Oh.
So it was probably working its way up, and right. It was out of the summer distinction by the time it
right.
Billboard.
But it was, I mean, my God, Dan. I mean, you remember when that song was popular. Sure. You couldn't get around it, but for some reason, that specific song, I will always associate it with the 3 weeks that we spent in New York doing Vinyl Shop. Because I'm not kidding, it was everywhere.
Yeah. It's always so interesting that the videos for these songs also tend to be sweaty. That's a sweaty video.
Yeah.
Rob Thomas looks sweaty in that video.
Yeah. Well, anyway, in 1999, Genie in a Bottle was the biggest. Christina Aguilera, that was the biggest song of the summer of 1999. If You Had My Love by Jennifer Lopez, Bills, Bills, Bills by Destiny's Child, Last Kiss by Pearl Jam. Jeez, I didn't know that charted that high. Wow. I Want It That Way by the Backstreet Boys. Hell yeah. Where My Girl's At by 702. Oh, here's one, Dan. Are you ready for this one? All Star by Smash Mouth. Hey, man, you're an all star. That's almost as annoying as Smooth. And then what was it, 2 years later, they used it in the damn Shrek movie? Didn't they use it in the damn Shrek movie? Wild Wild West, Will Smith. Well, that was a bomb, that movie. It's Not Right But It's Okay by Whitney Houston, and Tell Me It's Real by Kiki and JoJo. KC and JoJo. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's see. Here is Herb on WGN. Hi, Herb.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
All right.
I was telling your producer that if you wanted to follow on with the Star Trek theme, play anything by William Shatner.
Yeah, we've played some William Shatner, and we've had William Shatner requests over the years. Yeah,
I believe it. Yeah, I used to have XM radio, but I threw it out. I'm a truck driver, so now I'm starting to listen to local radio here in Chicago. But I was guessing Dance Hall Days by Wang Chung, and excuse me for that. Our House. I got the year wrong. Your producer said I got the year wrong. I was thinking it was 83.
Yeah, that was 83. I'll tell you what. The summer of 1983 was the summer I graduated high school, Herb. And
All right.
That was the summer, and I'm not even looking at the list yet to 1980, but that was the summer of Synchronicity by the Police. That was the album of the summer of 1983. They kicked off their tour, their world tour here at Comiskey Park in Chicago, and I went. But the song that dominated the summer of 1983, and I'm going to look it up right now, is it's got to be "Every Breath You Take" by the Police.
I should have figured that. The minute you said Synchronicity, that's a big one.
It is, yeah. Number one, "Every Breath You Take," followed by "Flashdance," "What a Feeling," "Sweet Dreams Are Made of This" by Eurythmics, "Maniac" by Michael Cimbello, "Electric Avenue" by Eddie Grant, "She Works Hard for the Money," Donna Summer. "Is There Something I Should Know," Duran Duran, "Stand Back" by Stevie Nicks, and "Wanna Be Starting Something" by Michael Jackson. But yeah, I mean that 1983, I just vividly remember the year I graduated high school was the year, the 1983, that summer, it was the summer of the Police. There was just no two ways about it.
There was only one bad song on an album. Mrs. Gradinko wasn't real good, but there was one that was it Andy Summers, the drummer,
Mother,
sang it?
Mother. Yeah.
Mother, yeah. What a horrible song that was.
Well, those are the two songs that you mentioned. The two songs that you mentioned are the only ones that weren't written by Sting. Miss Gradinko was written by Stuart Copeland, and Mother was written by Andy Summer. Andy Summer.
Yep.
So, all right, Herb, thanks.
All right, you have a good one,
Take
man.
Take care. All right, everybody hang on. We're talking about big summer songs. Yeah, I'm telling you, Dan, that year, it was all about Synchronicity, and "Every Breath You Take" was on the radio constantly. And then the cool, really awesome black and white video that was on MTV every 2 seconds. It was huge. And yeah, and they were my favorite band at that time. So I love the Police. All right, let's take a break, and we'll come back. We're going to reminisce a little bit more about songs that we remember from the summer. 312-981-7200. The Ballad of Bilbo Baggins. Glenn requesting some Leonard Nimoy on Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah. Bilbo Baggins. Are there any other songs written about the Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit? Except for, like, Zeppelin makes weird references to the Lord of the Rings that make no sense. In the song Ramble On, there's a lyric that's, and there's always references to, like, Middle Earth and all kinds of, because they were, like, into the medieval stuff, and they were also into the fantasy stuff, and they were Tolkien fans and stuff, but it Ramble On is a song about, you know, a guy that the guy that's just traveling around, rambling on. He can't have a serious relationship. But at one point in the song, Robert Plant sings, "But Gollum, the evil one, crept up and slipped away with her," meaning his girlfriend. So Gollum from Lord of the Rings steals Robert Plant's girlfriend in the song. Gollum didn't care about women. He cared about all he cared about was the ring. Gollum's going to sneak up and take away your girlfriend, Robert Plant? blow some more weed before you write lyrics. Oh, man. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio is here on That's Me, 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, and we are talking about summers, and what the songs that were most popular for each summer, dating back in time here. And if you want to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200. Here's Mike on WGN. Hi, Mike.
Hi, I could think of a couple songs that were popular in summer in the 1960s. I don't remember exactly which month or anything. Summer in the City by the Loving Spoonful was huge. I think it was 66, your call screener told me.
That was 66, but that was number two of that summer. Number one was Wild Thing by the Troggs. Yeah.
Okay. By number one and two, even the best sellers.
Yeah, they were the biggest songs of that summer, yeah.
All right, here's one you must know because you're a big fan of Tommy James, Crystal Blue Persuasion.
Yeah, Crystal Blue Persuasion would be like, what, 68 maybe?
Yeah.
68 or 69?
Or 8.
It's 69, no, it's 69, and it came in at number 3. Yeah. The number one was in the year, the summer of 69 was the year... The year 2525 was number one, and then Honky Tonk Woman by the Stones was number two. Crystal Blue Persuasion was number three.
As far as Tommy James goes, do you like that song, Crystal Blue Persuasion?
I love that song. Yeah.
Now you're talking.
Yeah, okay. No, I love Tommy James. Tommy James is just the best. So, all right, Mike.
And one other thing about Tommy. Yep. All right. Thanks, Todd. Take care.
Okay. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here are some texts that came in. Jay, Cruel Summer by Bananarama. Yeah. Yeah, that was huge. That would have been 1984. That would have been 1984. Didn't make the charts at that time because, well, I mean, that was when Doves Cry was number one, Ghostbusters was number two. And if you were around, by the way, if you were around in the summer of 1984, you couldn't get away from Prince. But Cruel Summer by Bananarama. Dan, do you know where that song originated?
I do not.
The Karate Kid.
Ah.
It's in The Karate Kid. It was featured in The Karate Kid and then became like a big hit for Bananarama, and then they released the video. But you can hear it in the... I think it's the scene where you can hear it in Karate Kid is... I think it's the scene on the beach where Daniel first meets... Where Macchio first meets Elizabeth Shue. On the beach. I think it's playing on a boom box. Jimbo, Mark the Breadman, and Dino say Summertime by Will Smith and DJ Jazzy Jeff. 301 area code says, I don't know if this came out in the summer or not, but Thunder Island always makes me think of summertime. 773 area code, Summer Madness by Cool and the Gang is a good summer song. Let's fly through some of these years. 1974, your big summer hit was Annie's Song by John Denver. You fill up my senses. That song was ridiculously popular. 1975, One of These Nights by the Eagles was your was your big song of the summer of 75. Summer of 76, Don't Go Breaking My Heart, Elton John and Kiki D. Summer of 77, I Just Want to Be Your Everything, Andy Gibb. Beating Out Best of My Love by One, by The Emotions. It's one of my favorite songs ever. Summer of 78, Andy Gibb again. 2 years in a row, Andy Gibb had the biggest song of the summer. In 78 was Shadow Dancing. Boy, the late 70s were just weird. Three Times a Lady, Grease, Miss You by The Stones, Baker Street by Jerry Rafferty, Boogie Oogie Oogie by A Taste of Honey, Last Dance by Donna Summer, Hot Blooded by Foreigner, Used to Be My Girl by the OJs, Still the Same by Bob Seger. Really Still the Same by Bob Seger? 1979, Bad Girls by Donna Summer. That was the big hit of the summer, which is, you know, good because her last name is Summer. 1980. Summer of 1980, it's Still Rock and Roll to Me by Billy Joel. Yeah. In 1981, as we mentioned, Jesse's Girl. 1982. Oh, my God, 1982. Dan, this is just, there was no other song. It was Eye of the Tiger by Survivor. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just, sure. Rocky III had come out in May. Came out in May of 1982. And for that entire summer, Eye of the Tiger was everywhere. Everywhere. That was back when B96 was hot hits. They were like a, you know, a hot hit. They didn't do the house stuff or the dance music or anything like that. They were just like all the hot hits. They played Eye of the Tiger every 15 minutes. I'm really not exaggerating. It was like at least once an hour. And I'm not exaggerating. At least once an hour, Eye of the Tiger was played. And they also played a lot off the Toto album, the Toto 4 album, like Africa and Rosanna. Those were all... there's Rosanna. Rosanna's on the list. Yeah, 1982. Oh, and Abracadabra, I Want to Reach Out and Grab You. Once again, Steve Miller writing rhymes that don't make sense. As we mentioned, 1983, Every Breath You Take. 1984, When Doves Cry by Prince. 1985, Shout by Tears for Fears. Every Time You Go Away by Paul Young comes in second. The Power of Love by Huey Lewis from Back to the Future, the biggest movie of 1985. Hey, do you know what Zemeckis' next movie is? They just announced it.
No.
He's remaking The Witches. The Roald Dahl story that John Huston made years ago, like 1990? It wasn't John Huston. Somebody else directed it. Angelica Huston was the star of it. And they just announced that that's Zemeckis is next. He's adapting Roald Dahl's book. It's going to be his screenplay. And Anne Hathaway got the lead.
Oh, very cool.
They just announced that, so that should be cool. And of course, let's not forget, in the summer of 1985, there was a St. Elmo's Fire, Man in Motion, by John Parr. One of the most ridiculous songs of all time. 1986, Papa Don't Preach by Madonna. So the other ones there. Higher Love by Steve Winwood. Holding Back the Years by Simply Red. Glory of Love by Peter Cetera. 1987, Alone by Heart. I Want to Dance with Somebody, Whitney Houston. Still haven't found what I'm looking for. U2, Shakedown by Bob Seger. La Bamba by Los Lobos. That was the summer of 87. So, yeah. Here's Mark on WGN. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
Just wondering where Freeze Frame from Jay Giles fell in there.
Freeze Frame?
Yeah, you remember that song that Jay Giles?
Of course,
that
Jay Giles band? That had to be like 81, right? Something like that?
Yeah. I'm a 83 grad, too, so I just kind of remember it from the high school days.
Yeah, no, it's not on the list. I mean, I remember, you know, that album, the Freeze Frame was big, and Centerfold was a huge song off of that record. Yeah.
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 Or then Jenny, who can I turn to?
Yeah, I don't know if that was specifically summer. That's 867-5309. I remember when that song came out. There was only one area code at that time. Everything was 312. And so when 867-5309 came out, the unfortunate family who had that number got 9,000 phone calls a night. They had to change their number. I remember there was a news story about it because everybody and this happened across the country, like in every state. You know, in big cities, they're calling 867-5309, you know, to see what would happen. And so these unfortunate people who had that phone number were just being buzzed by crazy for that whole time. So, all right, Mark, thanks for the call. Take care. Yeah. All right. You know that you, Dan, you're too young to remember. Do you have any memories of the original VJs on MTV?
Yeah, like here and there, because they were still around when you started watching.
Yeah.
I mean, not as prevalent, and there was. But I do remember.
Because you had Mark Goodman, you had Alan Hunter, J.J. Jackson, Nina Blackwood, and Martha Quinn. Martha Quinn was, you were either an Ina Blackwood guy or a Martha Quinn guy. I was a Martha Quinn guy. And I love Lena Blackwood, and she was a great guy. I've had her on twice. She's a great guest, Lena Blackwood. Tons of great stories. Been in the radio business and the rock business for a long time, and she wrote a book about her years in MTV. I had her on twice to talk about it. But anyway, I was a Martha Quinn guy. And there was this, if you watch the video, because somebody just mentioned Freeze Frame, the Jay Giles, that album with Freeze Frame on it and Centerfold on it was massive, huge in like 1981-ish. But there's a girl in the Centerfold video, because the video takes place for the most part in a classroom full of girls and stuff. There's a girl in the Centerfold video looks just like Martha Quinn. And there were all these rumors like that's Martha Quinn. And because they're in their underwear and stuff at one point, and they're kind of marching around, they're dancing around the classroom like in their skivvies. And everybody was very excited because it was like, ooh, Martha Quinn's in her underwear, you know? And people were all the teenage boys who had a crush on Martha Quinn were like, ooh, we get to see her in her underwear, and it's not her. And she had to actually address it. Like she would play the video and go, that's not me. I'm telling you right now, I just played the video, and that's not me. But she looked just like Martha Quinn. And I'll never forget that because it was like everybody was convinced it was her, but she was keeping it a secret, and she didn't want to tell anybody. But yeah, it was just the prospect of like a 14-year-old kid, a 14-year-old or 13-year-old boy, the prospect of seeing Martha Quinn in her underwear was just so overwhelming that it was like, it's her, it's her. So, all right, let's break for the weather. We'll come back and we'll wrap this up here. More of the big summer songs from each year. And then it's Pizza Week. It's National Pizza Week, everybody. So we're going to jump in and start talking about pizza, too. That's coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. 301 area code requesting the Shy Lights, and that's Oh Girl, classic song. How's everybody doing this morning? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We're here till 5 o'clock. Coming up at 5, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell, and at 6, Steve Cochran with your morning drive. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Okay, let's get back to summer songs that came out in the summer that we're interested in. These were big hits in the summer, and they you remember listening to them when you were, I don't know, out at the beach or doing something. We got all of those. We got more of these coming up. So we got some texts. Beach Baby by the First Class, 219 area code says. Sam says, could you tell us what the top 10 songs for the summer of 1963 were? Thank you, Nick. Okay, I can do that. 1963, your big summer songs were Fingertips Part 2 by Little Stevie Wonder, Surf City by Jan and Dean, Easier Said Than Done by The Essex, So Much in Love by The Times, Sukiyaki by Kiyo Tsukamoto, Wipeout by The Safaris, Blowing in the Wind by Peter, Paul, and Mary, My Boyfriend's Back by The Angels, You're the Devil in Disguise by Elvis with the Jordanaires, and Candy Girl by The Four Seasons. Lots of summery songs in that top 10 list. Yeah, that was 1963. Rick says, Sister Golden Hair by America, Take It Easy by The Eagles, Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting by Elton John, all big summer songs. Jim says, Too Much Barbecue by Big Twist and the Mellow Fellows. All right. Mike and Hobart said, because you're Saga's number one fan. Yeah, that's right. And I'm number two. Didn't On the Loose come out sometime around the spring or summer of 81? Can't believe it's been over 35 years ago. We're so old. I thought On the Loose was 82. I want to say it was 82. I think On the Loose by Saga was 82. It was on the album Worlds Apart, which came out in Canada earlier. So maybe it was because Worlds Apart didn't come out until it came out in America in the summer of 82, I think, or something like that.
Yes. So 1981, the band's fourth album Worlds Apart was released. The second single, On the Loose, was featured on Heavy Rotation MTV, and December 82 proved to be their breakthrough in America, where it peaked at number 26 on the Billboard charts.
So it was late 82 then?
Late 82 and 83.
And the reason I remember that, Dan, is because that when I first saw them, it was the summer of 82 when they opened up for Jethro Tull. And then the next day I went to the record shop on Ashland and went to the import section and bought Worlds Apart. And then because it has a different cover than the American release of Worlds Apart has a different cover than the Canadian release. The Canadian release has an old dude with a map and there's like waterfalls behind him. That's the Canadian release. And I had that. And of course I bought the American release too. So because I'm the biggest Saga fan. Because Saga rules. All right, 1989, Right Here Waiting by Richard Marx. Yeah, 1989, Right Here Waiting by Richard Marx. 1990, Vision of Love by Mariah Carey. Ooh, The Power by Snap. I got the power! That song rules. And then, of course, Step by Step by New Kids on the Block was also big in the summer of 1990. Rock the Cradle of Love by Billy Idol. That, of course, you know what movie that was featured in, Dan?
What movie?
That would be The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, starring Andrew Dice Clay, directed by the one and only Rennie Harlan. Cradle of Love. Here's the thing about I'm not crazy about that song, but the girl in that video, I watched that video every, I don't like the song very much, but I watched that video every single time it came on MTV, and it was in pretty heavy rotation. The girl in that video in Cradle of Love, you know, there was a time when they would call them like video vixens, like they had these hot models who would show up in different videos and dance around half naked and stuff. That she was like, I don't know her name, I don't know what kind of career she had. All I know is that in Cradle of Love she was ridiculously hot. And I didn't even like the song, but I watched it every time because of her. Yeah, she was like, you know, back in that time, you know, like, you know, you got your late 80s and into the early 90s. That was like the height of using, you know, hot chicks. Most of them were hair metal band guys, you know, or you know, like a hot actress that you're married to, like Tony Kattan rolling around on top of Rolls Royces and stuff. But the girl in Cradle of Love, oof. 1991, oh. God, I remember you. Okay, so Dan, you say some of the songs that you're talking about that you remember from weddings,
right?
Okay, 1991. I think I went to three or four weddings that year. And the number one song of that summer, and this is without question the truth, "Everything I Do It For You" by Bryan Adams from that damn Robin Hood movie. I hate that song, and. I went two of the weddings that I went to. We went to four weddings that it was. At the time I was dating Leslie Presley, and we went to like four weddings. I think it was a couple of my friends and a couple of her friends. You know, were getting married, and so, and it was the song was played at all of the weddings, and two of the four weddings it was the first dance. It was the couple's first dance. That's how popular that damn song was. 1992, number one song of the summer, "Baby Got Back" by Sir Mix-a-Lot. Nothing wrong with that. But number two is the one that I thought would be number one, and that's "End of the Road" by Boyz II Men, because that was everywhere that summer. And then "Under the Bridge" by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, summer of 1992. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. "Blood Sugar Sex Magic" came out in 91, fall of 91, but "Under the Bridge" really started to take off in the spring. I remember, man, there's another song that was everywhere. You couldn't get away from that song. Heavy rotation on MTV. The video played all over the place. It was on the radio constantly. Crazy. All right, we'll take a break for the news, and afterwards we'll wrap up the summer song talk and then get into some pizza talk in honor of National Pizza Week. News is coming up after the Triple Play Thursday, everybody. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. And that is, of course, the Shy Lights 301 area code requesting, "Have you seen her?" Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here until 5, I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich is going to have the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran with your morning drive at 6. And 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We're talking about songs that were huge in the summer, and we're going through the years. So, 1993, "Can't Help Falling in Love" by UB40 was your big hit. 1994, I Swear by All for One. I don't remember how that goes.
It was kind of in that Boyz II Men-esque vibe. It was four guys.
Yeah. I just don't remember the song.
You probably remember the country version put out by John Michael Montgomery.
I wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't. Oh, man. You know what came in second that year, Dan, 1994?
I made mistakes. I'll never break your heart. And I swear.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
By the moon.
Oh, of course. Yeah. No, I know it now. Yeah. Yeah. You know, number two was Stay, I Missed You by Lisa Loeb.
It's the first song I ever knew all the lyrics to.
What? Really?
Yep.
I wouldn't be embarrassed about that at all either, because it's a great song. Awesome.
You know, what was funny, you remember, of course, At Midnight, which was hosted by Chris Hardwick. Lisa Loeb was on when she was one of the panelists, and at one point she says, hey, remember when we used to date in the 90s? So apparently they dated. Chris Hardwick and Lisa Loeb dated. Which seems about right. So I guess they dated, but he must have been, what was he? He was probably hosting Singled Out, right? At that, when they were,
yeah, probably.
At that time. 1995, Waterfalls by TLC. That was your big one. Kiss from a Rose by Seal was up there, too. 96, the Macarena. Oh, the Macarena. Yeah, I got married in 1996, and we made sure that if the DJ played the Macarena, we would smash his turntable over his head. That was the 1997, I'll Be Missing You, Puff Daddy was your number one. Oh, Bitch by Meredith Brooks comes in at number two. Semi-Charmed Life by Third Eye Blind, Dan, coming in at number six on that summer of 97. 98, The Boy Is Mine by Brandy and Monica. 99, as we mentioned before, Genie in a Bottle. 2000, Bent by Matchbox 20. Which one is that? I'd probably know it if I heard it, right?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, you know what came in at number nine in 2000, the summer of 2000? Higher by Creed. That's my go-to karaoke song, by the way. Higher by Creed. So, yeah, Bent was number one by Matt.
Read around my smile again. Shouldn't be so complicated. Just hold me in again. Or just hold me again. Can you help me? I'm bent. I'm so scared that I'll never get put back together.
Okay. I mean, I remember that was a number one song.
I was surprised. Yeah, that's surprising.
That's a number one. That was a number one song? What the hell is going on? 2001, You Remind Me by Usher was your song of the summer. 2002, Hot in Here by Nelly. That was a huge song. 2003, Crazy in Love by Beyonce featuring Jay-Z. 2004, Confessions Part 2 by Usher. I don't know that. I probably would if I heard it, right? 2005, We Belong Together by Mariah Carey. 2006, oh, this is one of my favorite songs. This is one of my favorite songs ever, Promiscuous by Nelly Furtado. I love that song. I love that song. And that was Timbaland who produced that. I mean, you know, the guy who basically, like, made JT's solo career. One of the great producers. And that sounds like a Timbaland song. I mean, he's on the song, too. I bought that Nelly Furtado album. Like, right, I bought it as soon as I heard Promiscuous. I was like, oh, I love that song. That is one of my favorite songs. 2007, Umbrella by Rihanna. 2008, I Kissed a Girl by Katy Perry. 2009, I Got a Feeling. Oh, there it is, right there. I Got a Feeling by Black Eyed Peas. And second was Boom Boom Pow by Black Eyed Peas. Big year for Black Eyed Peas, 2009.
Mm-hmm.
2010, California Girls, Katy Perry featured Snoop Dogg's on that song?
Yeah, he's got, you know, the rap in early.
Oh, he's got the, oh. Okay. I guess I didn't listen to that song enough. I Love the Way You Lie, Eminem featuring Rihanna. That's a good song. That's a real good song. Have we never played that on
I don't think we
on
have.
Fly Jams Friday? Because that's a great song. 2011 Party Rock Anthem by LMFAO. Those are the guys that they have wear crazy glasses and lighted hats and stuff, right?
Right.
Key and Peele did a bit where they take off on that, and the whole song was about partying all night, and then they end up like after hour number 28, they're like, I don't know what the hell's going on. They're like at all these raves dancing around, and they start out really great, and then after like a day and a half, they're like, I can't do this anymore. 2012, Call Me Maybe. 2013, Blurred Lines. Robin Thicke. 2014, Fancy by Iggy Azalea. I don't know that. Oh, God, Happy by Pharrell. I hate that song. 2015, now we're getting into the area where I don't know what the hell anything is anymore. Actually, it's been a few of these, like Cheerleader by OMI. What is that?
It's a guy who's very, his girlfriend is kind of like the cheerleader for his life, so he's very happy to have her cheering him on.
Uh-huh. All right. I'm looking at this list, 2015. See You Again by Wiz Khalifa. I think I know that. Bad Blood by Taylor Swift and Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, See You Again was in the Fast.
That was in the Fast and the Furious, yeah. Right? There was a Paul Walker. Okay, I know that one. Can't Feel My Face by The Weeknd. I love that song. That's a jam. Yeah. Shut Up and Dance by Walk the Moon. I'm so unhit.
That one you might recognize because that was kind of like a rock song that made its way into a bunch of commercials.
All right. And then 2016, One Dance by Drake. I don't know. Oh, Can't Stop the Feeling, Justin Timberlake. That comes in second. That was in the Trolls movie. I know that song. God, I don't know. And then finally, 2017, Despacito. I know that. You couldn't get away from that. All right. Well, there you go. Those are your big summer songs. So think summer now for the next couple of days because it's going to be pretty chilly out there. And there you go. Okay. Every Breath You Take. That's still the one that I think dominated that the summer the most of that I can recall. That was the song of the summer, the most dominant song of any summer that I can remember. And it was 1983, and it was Every Breath You Take by the Police. Okay. Hey, Dan, did you know that it's National Pizza Week?
I heard that on the radio.
I don't know if you knew that or not, but we're going to talk a little more pizza because it shouldn't just be one day. It shouldn't be Pizza Day because it's pizza. It's an entire week, and it deserves it. So if you want to jump in with more pizza talk, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Here until 5 a.m. and Triple Play Thursday. Yeah! 301 area code. The Shy Lights give more power to the people. All right. So discovering earlier this week that it is, in fact, National Pizza Week. So we've been talking about a little pizza talk every morning this week, dedicating our little time to pizza. And before we get into some of the pizza slang that is exclusive to pizza and some of the other facts about pizza. Dan, do you know there's a really popular and famous pizza place that is up for sale?
Really?
Gulliver's is in West Ridge. It's been there for 50 years over on Howard Street, and it's up for sale. And one of the Gulliver's fans says it's the most popular restaurant in the neighborhood for forever, and they're helping to sell the restaurant. Gulliver's, a West Ridge mainstay for five decades, is up for sale. The restaurant at 2727 Howard Street, famous for its pan pizza and being packed wall-to-wall with antiques, has an asking price of $895,000. It's been part of West Ridge since 1965. The listing went up a few days ago, but already calls from interested parties are coming in, said Randall Pavlock, the owner of Hunter Properties, which is listing the property. No serious offers have been made yet, however. It would be nice to keep it there and have somebody pick it up, freshen it up a bit, and keep it going, Pavlock said. It's been the most popular restaurant in the neighborhood forever. Business is still good, Pavlock said, but Gulliver's owners, Chris Karagorgias, is looking to retire. He hopes a new owner can keep Gulliver's going and find a different use for the sizable space. It'd be a shame not to have this in the neighborhood, Pavlock said. He is a West Ridge resident who lives near Gulliver's. My children, when they were little, that was their favorite restaurant. My grandkids went there as their first restaurant. Gulliver's was founded in 1965 by pan pizza legends Jerry Freeman and Bert Katz. The two soon split up. Katz later founded famous pizza restaurants like Pequod's, and Freeman developed a passion for antiques and filled the restaurant with stained glass lamp statues and other items. They're throughout the restaurant. They're in the patio. They're everywhere else. It had a great collection of stained glass windows. Freeman died in 2006, and the restaurant was sold by his family to the current owner, who's been in the restaurant business all his life. Gulliver's expanded over the years and stretches across four lots and has a large patio. The restaurant seats 350 people, and the property includes a parking lot across the street. Some of the stained glass and antiques in the building have been sold off, and all of the items are for sale, Pavlock said. But most of the antiques remain. The sellers will negotiate over the antiques with whomever buys the building if the buyer is interested. For now, Gulliver's remains open, and Pavlock hopes to keep it that way. So Gulliver's, man, that's a classic restaurant. I lived in Andersonville for many years, and that was a restaurant I ordered from and went to many, many times. And they talk about the antique. If anybody's been there to Gulliver's, if you want to comment on this, text or talk, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. It's a pretty legendary place. You know, been there for 53 years, and it's Dan. Have you been to Gulliver's?
No, I have not.
It's actually kind of a crazy place, and they have, they deliver as well, but they have like a crazy menu. Like they've got Mexican food. They've got they've got pizzas. They've got sandwiches. It's seriously, there would be times when I'd be at home, and I'd pull out the Gulliver's menu to do it, to deliver, and I would sit there for 15 minutes trying to figure out what I wanted, because it was like 12 pages long, and they mentioned the antiques and stuff. It was one of the most unique looking restaurants. It was kind of a crazy looking restaurant. Like, you would go in there and you felt like you were in it was clean and the food was good and everything, but it felt like you were in a hoarder's house, because there was stuff everywhere. There were antiques hanging from the ceiling, stained glass windows all over the place. If you went there to eat, you'd sit in a booth. You'd be surrounded by weird antiques and windows and all kinds of crazy stuff. And a lot of people, when they would finish eating or if they'd order a pizza and they've got you got some time to wait, you just walk around the restaurant and look at all the stuff. In one visit, you probably couldn't take in all of the crazy little antiques and trinkets and stained glass they have everywhere. And it was, seriously, like everywhere you went. I remember the first time I walked in there, I was like, what's going on? I was like looking around. I'd never seen anything like it. It was unbelievably original and unique. And there was no other restaurant that had that kind of weird collection jammed in every corner and every table of the restaurant, and you could just walk around and look at all these antiques while you were waiting for your food or after you ate. A really unique place. I hope it stays open, because it's a staple in that neighborhood. It really is. And the pizza's good, and it's unique, and they deliver. I just hope it doesn't close. I really, it's up now. It's up for sale, and I hope whoever buys it, keep it open, because this is a legendary place. It's a legendary place that a lot of people really, really love. And as one of the people in this article mentioned, there's a lot of history there. It's been there for 53 years, and lots of families brought their kids there, and now those kids are adults, and they're bringing their kids there. It's that kind of restaurant, and unique and pretty crazy, too, and I hope it stays the same. So, but anyway, it's up for sale. That's Gulliver's over on Howard Street, a pretty legendary place. And I hope they don't close, because that would be sad. It would, you know, we already lost Sabatino's this past year, and we don't want to lose another sort of legendary, unique restaurant. Let's see. Here is Steve, the limo driver. Hey, Steve.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Happy New Year. You know, it confuses me because you don't have that ding when you go on the air at the old studio. When you say hello, there was always a ding when I go on the air. So I kind of get confused when you guys say hello now.
Oh, all right.
Also, a good day to catch me because I'm not a regular listener. Let me turn down my radio. Not because I don't want to, it's just because the TV at night is better than the radio. But, not better, but, you know.
All right, thank you, Steve. Also, I appreciate that. That was kind of you. All right.
Years before I even dreamed of driving a limo, I drove a truck for Battaglia Distributing. It's an Italian distributing company, south side of Chicago. Been there almost 100 years or something. I drove a truck there, and we had Gulliver's was one of our stops every week. I remember it fondly. Of course, when we'd get there, it'd be like 10:30 in the morning or whatever. But I know it was very popular. I know that what it looks like and everything. And I'd be bring all our supplies into the cooler and stuff. They had plastic garbage cans full of sliced mushrooms and sliced onions, just to tell you what kind of volume they were doing when they later in the night.
Right.
So yeah, and I think we went there with my family once or twice as well, and there, I believe there was more than one location in the Rogers Park area, I believe. I could be mistaken. But also, so I agree with you, everything about the equality there, and I hope they don't close either.
Right.
I think they may have been sold before from the original owners, but I don't.
Yeah,
know
I just
sure.
Yeah, Steve, I just talked about that. It was in the article. They went through it's been sold twice. So
yeah, okay. You don't have to confuse me. I had emergency surgery Sunday morning at 3 a.m., which since I've been a guest on your show, this is like my fifth emergency surgery. So
all right.
Anyway. I'm doing okay. I had
good.
An aortic aneurysm repair, which is like a balloon that blows up in your stomach.
Uh-huh. All right. Steve, you know what? We have to go to the news now. So I appreciate you calling and updating your health with us. So, sorry, Steve. glad you're doing well. That was a focused phone call, right, Dan?
And coincidentally, did not get to the point.
Did not get to what he called.
He's like, hey, I used to deliver it for Basquiat's. I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
There
hang on.
We know his health right now and the emergency surgeries that he's had. That was important to share. I'm just kidding around, Steve. Thanks for listening, even though the TV's better at night. All right, let's take a break. The news is coming up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Thursday, and yeah. So we have been celebrating National Pizza Week pretty much all week, and we've been doing some pizza topics each morning, and we've got a couple more here. We have some great slang pizza slang that we're going to get to. And I got more facts about pizza, and we would love to hear from you in the world of pizza if you want to join us. Talk or text. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here is the bakery guy on WGN. How you doing?
Morning.
Morning.
I used to deliver for Gulliver's.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, some afternoons, some evenings. One afternoon, it was slow. Jerry took me around for a tour and gave me like a history of most of the fixtures.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's a great place, man. And I hope they don't. I hope they don't shut it down. I hope whoever buys it keeps it open and keeps it the way it is. Because, yeah,
yeah. But I can tell you one thing. I can give you a time frame of when I worked there.
Okay.
Every Saturday night, I made sure I got up in time to watch SNL because the skit Pat was on.
Because the what was on?
The skit Pat.
Oh, Pat. Oh, okay. So, yeah, you worked there. You worked there in the late 80s then.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure. I always got a kick out of how they're going to come up with a new name that went both ways.
Yeah, there it is. All right. Thank you, Baker Guy. Take care.
All right.
All right. There's a back there. He worked at Gulliver's. Okay. Well, and after 50 years, it's being sold, but we hope it stays the way it is. And if you've got any Gulliver's memories, what a crazy looking restaurant, really a unique and a really cool place with a 40,000 page menu. If you've ever been there, or if you've ever ordered from there, 312-981-7200. Here's Patrick on WGN. Hey, Patrick.
Nick, good morning, man. Long time no talk.
Yeah.
Sorry I haven't been calling, but
how you been?
I don't get to listen as much. I'm getting better.
Good.
I'm getting better, slowly but surely.
Good, man, good.
Slowly but surely. Man, I don't have any Gulliver's memories. I do remember the restaurant because I lived in Rogers Park for many years, and I used to work in Skokie. Had to take the 97 Skokie bus. Would always drive past that restaurant.
Right.
But unfortunately, not once have I ever been able to go to that place.
Yeah, so it's a pretty pretty unique place. Yeah, and
Well, it doesn't sound like it's dead yet. It's just
no. I would imagine the new owners aren't going to mess with it. I mean, the place has been around for 53 years. You know, have a little respect for that. You know, so
I have a feeling somebody's going to buy that place that, you know, has fond memories and will do their best to keep the recipes the same and probably add a few updates. They won't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It won't be that much of a change. At least that's what I'm holding my heart.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You know, so cool. But yeah, just, you know, I just wanted to call and just check in. Haven't talked to you in a while. We got a joint out here. I was telling Dan, there's a pizza place we like out here in Bolingbrook, really, that's, we had the pizza once, fell in love with the place. You know, we usually, you know, most people call to complain. We called and tell them how great it was and got them on speed dial. Every time the wife calls, he knows exactly what we want. It's a Pizza Italiano over on Jane's Avenue. I'm sorry, I don't know if I was allowed to mention
okay.
the place.
Yeah. No, that's all right. Pizza Italiano.
Yeah. It was really good stuff, man. We like it out here, you know. Yeah. I usually don't tell everybody what I like because, you know, everybody's taste is different. But, hey, so far, people we've told about it have loved it. So if you're ever out there, give them a shot, see how you feel.
Very cool.
You know, and summer can't get here soon enough. You know why.
Yes, I know why. Yeah. The Godzilla King of Monsters, that trailer, the new trailer is unbelievable.
Did you see it in IMAX? I just saw it in IMAX on Sunday.
No, I have not. I've seen the trailer. Well, first I saw it online, obviously. As soon as it debuted, I watched it about 12 times online. I've only seen it about
100.
Yeah, I've only seen the trailer in the theater once, and it was in standard, not IMAX.
Oh my God! It was my wife's birthday on Sunday, so we went to see Aquaman, and they played the guy. I'm sitting there shaking my played a Godzilla trailer,
yeah.
And they played it.
Yeah.
And that is an IMAX movie.
Oh, no, no. I will. There's no way that I'm not seeing it on IMAX. There's no way.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's going to be so good.
I'm like shaking. As much as it is excited as we are for that movie, it better not suck.
It better
not be 98 all over again.
Yeah, I know.
I will get up and beat somebody with my bad heart. I will beat somebody.
All right, Patrick, good to hear from you, buddy. Have a good one.
You too, man. You be blessed. Take care.
There. 312-981-7000. Yeah, the Godzilla trailer. Have you seen the Godzilla trailer, Dan?
I have not.
Oh, my God. I watched it like five times in a row when it debuted online. It's going to be the greatest movie ever made in the history of cinema. They may as well just, they should cancel next year's Oscars and just give all awards that are invented to the people behind the Godzilla movie. Ridiculous. It looks so insane. It looks so good. All right. Here's Jim on WGN. Hi, Jim.
Good morning, Nick.
Morning.
I love your show. I'm taking somebody to the airport this morning. I live in Wisconsin, so I was taking somebody to the airport in Milwaukee. And a lot of time I podcast you, but I really dig your show. It's great. And
your
producer, we had a good laugh this morning. He can tell you about it. Hey, pizza story. I worked at a place you might remember if you ever traveled this way called Shakey's Pizza.
Oh, sure. Shakey's. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I turned 18 in 78 and needed a job over the summer, and I was a prep guy. So when the guy talked about the mushrooms, you know, the big white garbage bags full or garbage cans full of mushrooms and onions. Yeah. Well, they taught me how to do the dole. So I'd have to do the dole for the day. And I had this certain mixture. None of this is written down, of course. It was told to me, and I was, you know, expected to remember this. Also, sweep the place, like the parking lot beforehand, tap the beer, serve people. I had this crazy woman who, if you didn't give them the receipt, you know, you'd get your lunch for free. Well, she wanted not only lunch, she wanted money in my head. You know, she was like, she was making a big scene and like, so anyways, the best story was I put in too much yeast, or didn't put in enough yeast or too much yeast, and I remember checking it, and the lid kept coming off of the top of the garbage can because I put in too much, so this thing kept growing and growing, and I kept using the thing, and that was my third day. That was my last day. I just said, nah, this wasn't for me, and I found a different job.
There you go. All right. That's good. All right, Jim, thanks for the call.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, you got to make room for the good. The dough's got to proof, man. You can't, and it gets really big. It like doubles, in size when you proof the dough. So that's pretty funny, though. But you see the dough just rising up out of the can and the lid coming up. all right, Steve is on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Nick. I want to tell you, I used to work at Little Caesars, and there was this guy who would come in, and he would want three cans of anchovies on top of his pizza, plus all the grease from the bottom of the anchovy cans.
Oh, man.
And the girls would not touch the stuff and would not do it, so I had to do that. I was a delivery driver there, and the place was great, man. They had free pizza to eat, and easy job.
Yeah.
Side money. I like rolled anchovies with the capers in the middle. But my favorite pizza all the time was Eduardo's Deep Dish.
Eduardo's.
For every pound of dough, 2 pounds of butter. And they twice baked the sausage, drained the grease off, seasoned it, put it back in the oven. 4 inches of cheese for their deep dish. Their parent company is Gino's East, which is no comparison.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's Eduardo's. Yeah, Eduardo's is good pizza, good stuff. Wow, that anchovy story is pretty crazy, Steve. Jeez.
Oh, yeah. Hey, have you ever tried Rick Nielsen's pizza?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Peace. I've had it many times. Yeah. I've had it many times.
It's great.
It is. Yeah,
take
it's
care.
Really okay, Steve, take care. Yeah, peace. No, I can't believe we haven't mentioned peace until now, until Thursday. Peace is great. I used to go, you know, when Double Door was open, back when they had concerts at Double Door, that was always the place we went to before. And I took Bill Janovitz there when Buffalo Tom played Double Door 1 year. And we went. And the pizza's really good. It's very, very good. And a lot of different varieties. Yeah, the place is great. That's peace. Rick Nielsen, please, come on. Everything he put his name on is good. So, all right, we'll break. We got a few more texts coming here, and I've got some pizza slang that we're going to get to as well. But let's do the weather here. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Verzanich coming up with the opening bell, and also coming up the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
All right.
We got some texts coming in. We're talking... we're talking pizza. It's National Pizza Week, and we've been doing some pizza topics throughout the week in honor of that. So I've got some pizza slang that we're going to get to in a second. But a couple more texts came in. 847 area code says, back in the 80s, there was a pizza sauce my mom would buy that you'd spread on regular bread, top it with cheese, and make homemade pizza. Mm. 847 area code says, the silo in Lake Bluff is great, and it's been there forever. 301 area code says, you guys have been making me crave pizza all week. Definitely getting one tomorrow night.
Yes.
You got to celebrate pizza week. Okay, we got some pizza slang. These are slang words that are associated strictly with pizza, and we'll tell you what they mean. For instance, avalanche. An avalanche is what occurs when all the toppings slide off your pizza as soon as you pick it up. This tends to happen when a pizza is still piping hot from the oven. So be smart and give it a minute to cool down. You know, I remember remember one time, I can't remember where I ordered the pizza from, but apparently the driver must have like tipped it over or something. The delivery guy must have like tipped it over, or it fell, you know, it fell off the seat in the car or whatever, because I remember, you know, and I tipped the guy too. Like I took the pizza. I said, thank you, blah, blah, blah. Close the door, sit down, go grab something out of the fridge to get to drink. Come back in. I open up the box of the pizza and all the toppings are on one side. Like all the cheese is all piled up on one side. So, and I, you know, I could have called and complained, but I didn't. I think I was really hungry and I was like, I don't care. I'll just dig through the cheese and, you know, put the cheese on the other side that's empty, you know, that doesn't have any topping on it or whatever. So now, if you ever travel to New Haven, Connecticut, you might hear the locals order a beets. And it's spelled A-P-I-Z-Z-A, like a pizza. But it's pronounced a beets. And this refers to the local style of thin crust pizza, which originated at the famous Frank Pepe Pizzeria Napoletana, and has since become the area's pizza standard. Local style of thin crust pizza called a beets. That sounds kind of similar to what we have here, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe it depends on how it's cut, though. Grandma pie. This style of pizza is thick like a Sicilian pie, but with a thinner, denser crust. Although it's likely originated in Long Island, you can now find it in pizzerias throughout New York City and beyond. That's called the grandma pie. Party cut, also known as tavern cut. Now, see, now we're getting into the correct way to eat pizza. Cut in squares as God intended, as I've said. So party cut, or also known as tavern cut, a party cut describes any circular pizza that's cut into a grid. The portions are smaller and typically square, which helps ensure that everyone at your Super Bowl party will get at least a piece of the pie. All-dressed pizza. Order an all-dressed pizza in Montreal, and you'll get a deluxe pie with mushrooms, green peppers, and pepperoni on it. In Quebec, it's known as a pizza tout garni. Pepperoni, green peppers, mushrooms. Those are good toppings. A couple of more texts coming in. Let me get to those. Make sure we get these in. 847 area code says Ron Santo had a pizza chain. I don't really ever have his pizza, but he did have a pizza place at one time. Yes, he did. And they also sold Ron Santo's pizza at Wrigley. 773 area code, JB Alberto's on Morse, been there. 502 area code says there was a Gulliver's Pizza at Milwaukee and Dempster. They sold it years ago. Really? I don't remember that. Oh, wow, okay. Another great spot for pizza was Reggio's on Oakton, by Oakton and Milwaukee. 815 in Oglesby, Sam's Pizza. He opened it about 50 years ago. No employees except him. He had his mom doing prep work until she passed away 10 years ago. It's the best pizza in the Starved Rock area. So if you're in the Starved Rock area, Sam's Pizza. That's amazing that he's the only employee. Wow. Jeez. You're in the weeds pretty quickly if that's the case, though. Okay, flyers. This is another slang term, a pizza slang term, flyers. Slices of pepperoni pizza are called flyers, reportedly because of the way that they're often tossed around like frisbees. Okay, I never heard that before. More pizza slang. You know, you can impress people at your pizza party with all of this knowledge.
That you're throwing in honor of Pizza Week.
In honor of Pizza Week, that's right. National Pizza Week, everybody should be having a party.
Appetizer, pizza bread.
That always seems weird to me. Like if somebody orders a pizza and then gets cheesy bread.
Right.
I'm like, you know what cheesy bread is? It's pizza.
I remember I gave up pizza for Lent one year and Eileen made me a grilled cheese sandwich with tomato and I'm like.
Ha 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 So, did you eat it, or were you afraid you were gonna? You were afraid you were gonna go to hell.
You can't. You shouldn't waste food.
Right.
So.
Gotcha.
I ate it, but it was definitely a moment. Pause. Like, what did I just do?
Oh no, guilt. All right. Here's another pizza slang: guppies. Depending on your perspective, guppies is either a really cute or really gross way to describe anchovies. Oh man. Other slang words for the fishy topping include chovies, carp, penguin food, and smellies. It just makes anchovies seem all the more appetizing, right? How about this? Alpo. It's not very appetizing, but crumbled sausage does kind of resemble dog food, hence the Alpo moniker. Other names for the topping include kibbles and bits and puppy chow, neither of which make the topping sound any more appetizing. How about this? Screamers. Oh, I've heard this one before. This is a good one. This is a really good one. Screamers. Mushrooms are sometimes called screamers because of the high-pitched squeal the can variety lets out when they're tossed onto a hot surface. That's absolutely true. I like that one. That's a good one. Edgar Allan. Wait a minute. What's going on here? What does a pizza with pepperoni and onion spell out? A po, P-O, pie, which is close enough to the spelling of Edgar Allan Poe's last name that it gets tossed around in pizza kitchens on occasion. Sure, P.O. or Poe would be quicker or easier to say, but it's not nearly as fun. I like that one, too. Pepperoni onion, that's an Edgar Allan. Coastline. The coastline is that little bit of exposed sauce that you can see between the sauce and the crust. That's pretty cool. I like that one. Mutz, M-U-T-Z, Mutz. Simply a quicker way of saying mozzarella, like wet mutts is fresh mozzarella. And then finally, roadie. When you get a slice of pizza to go, that's a roadie. Never heard that before in my life. So impress your friends on National Pizza Week with all that wonderful pizza slang. So some funny stuff in there. Good stuff. All right. Dan, what do we got going on for tomorrow, Friday show?
We have travel writer Jen Rose Smith. She recently wrote a piece about the 50 best desserts around the world.
Travel writer. Cool. We will talk to her, and we will talk about the 50 best desserts around the world and much more right here on 720 WGN. Okay, we got a break. The news is coming up right after this on 720 WGN.